right, thank you for listening to a very special episode of Comics for Fun and Profit and
Cowcast.
The Cowcast. We are together, all four of us. We'll go around. It's Drew and Kyle over at Comics for Fun and Profit and
Eric and James from Cowcast.
So we wanted to get together and celebrate the halfway mark of a fantastic comics year. And if you're longtime listeners of our show, you know that at the end of every year, we kind of celebrate the year with a lot of our favorites and things that we really enjoyed reading and some of our standout writers and such. So a lot of times we forget some of the great stuff that comes out at the earlier in the year. And so we thought it'd be a great idea to check in at the halfway mark and go over some of our favorites in a variety of categories and share those with you. And please feel free to crush us for our choices on social media and our various, you can connect with us on our various social media and our websites. Ours, of course, is comicsfunprofit.com, where you can find all our links. And yours is Cowabunga Comics?
Cowabungacomics.com. That's right.
Fantastic. And so you can reach out to either one of us about some of our picks as we go down the list. Are we going to call these the Cowabungas or the...
we never did come up with a name for that, did we?
Yeah, I liked the Cowies or the Bungas.
I'm going to mix the Bungas, if that's okay. I'm going to go ahead and say no.
No Bungas?
No, no Bungas. No
do we just do Cowabunga for fun and profit?
Yeah.
it's a really long... It's going to cost us a mint in etching fees for our awards.
That's true.
But,
I guess we'll have to go with the Cowies.
We'll go with the Cowies. All right. So the first category is all about DC. And I thought it would be a good way to kick it off is talk about your hottest seller at DC. And I bet you I can guess.
Yeah, it's been Rebirth number one.
it's a no-brainer.
Right. It's just been amazing for us. I think, like I've said a couple of times on some different areas, we did reach a little bit farther than we normally would for a series book or any kind of event book. And it paid off in spades for us. I think, James, are we out now of the first print of Rebirth, or do we still have one or two left?
We are completely out as of last Friday. I'm going to bring my copies back to the shop, though, just because we've had so many people asking for them. But we, you know, this is a book that I think...
Are you going to sell that for cover at your store, at your shop?
Oh, yeah, of course. We sold all of them for cover.
Oh, nice.
6 months a year ago, we probably would have ordered 20 copies of this book, and then I probably would have kicked myself the next day after I submitted the order. one of the big reasons that we went so heavy on it was we had, as some listeners know, we had gone to the DC Retailer Roadshow, and that was down at the Hyatt Regency in Chicago, where they stressed the importance of this one shot. And I think, obviously, the 80-page book for $2.99 with all of their A-game writers and artists on it was a huge selling point. But the main thing that struck me, that it reminded me of, was the DC Countdown one-shot that they released, which is, it's probably going on about a decade ago now, where it was another 80-page, might have been 64 80-page one-shot for a dollar. And they had this build-up to it, and that's the one-shot where Max Lord kills Ted Kord. And when the book finally came out, the full title was Countdown to Infinite Crisis. And I remember that being just huge. And that book was sold out everywhere. And so Rebirth number one really put me in the mind of the original big DC $1 one shot. And so I just, remembering how well that went, I ordered a lot of them. We ordered, you know, about five times what we normally would have ordered for the book. And it paid off in spades.
Yep. We had a ton of people from other shops coming out to get it from us because their shops ordered light. It was just phenomenal. It couldn't have worked out better. And on top of it, it was an awesome book. So yeah, definitely the hottest seller, Rebirth number one.
Awesome. What is your favorite series of the first half of the year? Either one of you.
James, why don't you go first?
I'm assuming you're asking about our favorite DC series.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Which
yes.
No, that's fine. The Geoff Johns... Justice League. It has been what I had wanted Geoff Johns to be doing. The the last 5 years when he was writing books in the New 52. It felt like a Geoff Johns event in the same vein as like Green Lantern Rebirth, Sinestro Corps, or Blackest mm-hmm. Night. And I think it really had a lot of build up, and it really earned how good the story was. I would say it was probably the best thing that DC put out this year or last year, and that's counting the Rebirth one shot. So I was a big fan of Geoff Johns' Justice League.
I'm sorry, that is the wrong answer. The answer is Sheriff of Babylon. We were looking for Sheriff of Babylon. Okay.
You gotta specify your Vertigo here. Come on.
Always gotta shoehorn Vertigo.
Eric, what was yours?
I'm gonna go with Grayson. Even though Tom King moved off of it towards the end of the run, it was definitely one that, for me, just the artwork and the storytelling really fit hand in hand. I know you guys have talked about the kinetic artwork that was going on, and it just really added to the story. So I felt top to bottom, that was a story that I really enjoyed reading. I enjoyed looking at it, and it does eke out Snyder's Batman. That would have been the second one, but I just couldn't get completely into the Mechbat story. So for me, it's going to be Grayson.
Kyle, are you going to echo that?
No, not in the least. Actually, I'm going with Superman American Alien by Max Landis.
Oh. There's going to be some love for that later from me.
I absolutely adored that series. I'd fallen into the YouTube hole with Max Landis last year on a lot of things, and was really looking forward to this. Jumped on it from directly the beginning. I loved everything about it. I loved the different artists on each one. I love the way he tells a story and how he puts his own spin on the universe. And you can just kind of feel his general love for Superman, what he does. And as a guy who isn't big on Superman, it's a big thing for me to give that my favorite book of DC.
I was going to give that to my favorite miniseries, but I ended up giving that my something else down the road. I don't want to spoil that, to jump ahead. Like I said, mine was Sheriff of Babylon. I think the combination of Tom King and Mitch Gerads is pretty amazing. I love that creative team, and I think if DC was smart, they would give them a Sergeant Rock book and say go. I think that'd be pretty amazing. But yeah, I really love this book, and it's my top of one of my top of the stacks every time it comes out. So how about new series, James? DC. We're still in DC.
Yes, sure. You're going to need to specify with him.
Oh, that's okay. As far as the new DC series goes, I certainly like the first issue of Flash. I thought that was very good.
Yeah.
For single issue, I'll save that for the next question. But new series, I'm going to go with Flash.
And this is the new.
The new that there is only one issue out.
Gotcha.
The one that just came
out.
But I liked it. I like where it's going so far.
Excellent.
I've never been a diehard Flash reader, but this one at least enticed me to keep going with it. And I like the art. I like the writing style, so I'm gonna give it to Flash so far.
Awesome. Eric?
Yeah, for me, I'm also going to pick one of the new Rebirthed titles, but this is a tough one for me. I'm going to say that my new series is going to be Titans. I really loved that first issue. I'm really excited to see Dick Grayson back in his black and blue as Nightwing, the team coming back together, a couple of additions. That, to me, is really exciting. But in a close second is Wonder Woman. And James knows I am a sucker for Rucka and especially Nicola Scott. I'm really looking forward to what she does. But since there hasn't been a Nicola Scott issue out yet, it's going to be Titans for me for the new DC series.
Nice. Kyle?
I think I'm also going to go with a rebirthing, and Green Arrow. It surprised me because I did not expect to like it or have anything that really hooked me with it. But I like the Black Canary stuff back and the kind of the way they're building it. And I wasn't big into the new 52 Green Arrow in the least. A little bit on that Lemire run, and that was it. But there's just something about the art, which I really enjoyed, and the story that I think is going to be one that grabs me for a while.
Yeah, there's this character. He's a man, and he's a bat, and it's a really fascinating new series that they've come out with. It's called Batman, and it is really good. And I really, there's a Tom King theme here, and I thought that first issue that he did really, really was amazing, and I loved it. It kind of distanced itself from the Scott Snyder stuff, although that was good. It was good in a different way, and I really liked his approach to the character. So I'll stick with the Rebirth run and give it to Batman. Favorite single issue in DC? Should be a unanimous, I think.
Rebirth number one.
Yeah.
You know, unless, so you said for the entire last year or just the first half of the year?
First half of the year.
Okay, well, yeah, then we'll go with the Rebirth one-shot. Yeah.
I am not going with the Rebirth one-shot. I am going with Grayson issue 16. Mm. My wonderful sing-along issue that I loved so much.
Oh, yes.
That
yes.
still is one that I still pick up and read, and it's rare for me to reread a comic. I loved it. I enjoyed it. It was one of the last things the creative team did as a whole before we kind of coasted to the finish line. I think that will forever be one of my favorite issues. So Grayson 16 is my best single issue of DC.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, and I'm with Rebirth. Yeah, I went with Rebirth too. Eric, did you have Rebirth?
Yep, I did. I did.
Okay. So favorite DC writer?
Well, I can pick that one up. I could cheat and say Garth Ennis, but he hasn't really written anything Mm-mm. DC in a while, and I wasn't a huge fan of Section 8. I'm going to go with Geoff Johns, it's kind of an obvious out, but he's written so far two of the books I've named. I mean, he wrote Justice League and the Rebirth one-shot.
Yeah.
The guy's got a pretty dang good track record, so I'm going to stick with him.
No arguing there, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, for me, for Eric, I'm going to go with Tom King. Drew, I might have just taken yours, but he has been rock solid on everything he's touched. His storytelling is something that I latch on to. It's not super drawn out, but yet there's enough depth that it's intriguing and makes you want to dig in and read more. And that's, you know, spanning all the titles he's done, whether it's The Sheriff of Babylon, Grayson, and now moving into the Bat world and with the Batman title. So for me, it's Tom King.
Fantastic. Kyle?
I also have Tom King, and I cheated and also put Max Landis as my favorite DC writing.
That is a tie. There are no ties.
1 and 1A?
Oh, I don't know. Judges?
Geoff Johns.
Ooh, wrong on both accounts.
Okay, I went with Rob Williams, the writer of Unfollow, another Vertigo book.
Friggin' Vertigo!
Yeah, gotta give some love to Vertigo. It's goes way back with me, and doesn't get the love and support it needs. But yeah, I loved Unfollow. Still love Unfollow. It's great, and his writing is a big part of that. How about favorite artist at DC?
I can jump in and do that one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so for me, my favorite artist is, this is going to the Superman American Alien. He only did one issue, but Jai Lee. That issue was awesome. And, so he's my favorite artist, even though he only did one issue for this first half of the year.
Cool. I'm going to go with kind of a sad pick, but I've got to throw it out there. Darwin Cook with Twilight Children.
Yeah.
It's I'm pretty sure it's the last thing that he did that was published. And it was a phenomenal book. It was written by Love and Rockets, Gilbert Hernandez. And I think it was some of his most refined work. So sadly and I guess respectfully, I got to go with Darwin Cook on this one.
Yeah, it was. I found the story incomprehensible, but it was pretty to look at.
Yeah. I will agree with you on that to a point. No doubt about it.
Kyle?
Oh, since the run has come to an end and we've moved on, I'm going to have to just say Capullo. Thanks for everything. Enjoy the back half of your run on Batman, and always a big fan of his art, and he will be sorely missed for now.
Yeah. I went with Mitch Gerads just because I was still thinking about Sheriff of Babylon. I couldn't get it out of my head. So that's who I went with. This one I think is a really cool category for you guys as sellers, and this book you wish more people read and pre-ordered and, you know, supported?
Well, the one that I put down was Geoff Johns' run on Justice League, which is now over. So I wish more people had read that past tense. But that would have to be my answer. It's not going to drive many sales for us, but, you know.
It sold well, though, didn't it?
It did not sell as well by us as it probably sold
nationally
at a lot of other places. Okay. We didn't move a lot of copies of it. I think we had subscribers in the single digits for that book, and kind of surprising, but it was a great book.
Yeah, and for me, it's Grayson. Mostly because he wasn't Nightwing, I think, is why people kind of dropped off the book. They just weren't intrigued, and they missed out on a heck of a good story. So that's a kind of a frustration for me. I think Grayson was one. And then I have a Kyle 1B, and that's Superman American Alien. I do wish more people would have picked that series up, just because I think it was really kind of a novel thing to do, having a different artist with each issue and having Max Landis do the writing, typically not a comic book writer, and different tones with each book. I think that was a really cool way of telling a story, and I do wish that more people would have picked it up, because I think that they would have found at least one or two issues out of that run that really connected with them. So those are my 1A and 1B.
And, you know, I think I'd like to go back and change my favorite artist to the Joelle Jones issue that she did in that series.
Because, absolutely.
That was just amazing. But I think I'm using her down further on in another category, so I better not. I'll stick with Mitch Jarrett. Kyle, for you?
Grayson as well. Took the words right out of my mouth. I think also it just kind of, from the moment it came out, it just kind of steady decline, never really picked off, and it just kind of faded off a little bit much. I think more people needed to be reading that.
For me, it is still Astro City. I do not know why a consistently great book like Astro City does not get read by as many people as it should, and it's a darn shame. Now, kind of along the same lines, we're just going to shift gears into Marvel. What was your biggest seller up there?
Sure. So we've got kind of two answers for this one. Single line title for us is Vader. Vader is outsells Star Wars. It's been a consistent top of the line book for us for Marvel. But we took a look also to say, what's our best-selling character? And no surprise, that's Deadpool. He's in, you know, five or six titles right now. So if you're looking at a single-line title, it's Vader. If you're looking at one character, it would be Deadpool.
But I think we should note that even if we look after Vader, yeah, Deadpool is our best-selling Marvel character. But most of the Star Wars series still come in after Deadpool. I think he comes in at probably our fourth or fifth best-selling Marvel title. So the Star Wars books are still, they're still juggernauts. And they're still going to go strong, I think, for quite a while.
And tagging up on that, from the secondary market, Deadpool Spider-Man was the big one for me. I made a ton of money on Spider-Man Deadpool. From the three GameStop exclusive points variants I got, I was able to get quite a bit out of those. Got one still here that I had McGinnis sign at C2E2. To the first prints I flipped and sold, to the fifth print I flipped and sold. So across the board, Spider-Man Deadpool has been great on the secondary market and a great seller for myself.
Oh, okay. Did you have a hot seller you wanted to throw in for DC up there?
No, I didn't.
Okay. I thought maybe I had overlooked you and you wanted to be a part of that one.
I mean, the best thing probably from a secondary market for DC was the Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Those things flew up in price. Very underordered. Issue 2, extremely underordered, and a $25 book.
Nice.
Yeah, and those 1 in 50 variants are there's a few of them. I think 2 is going into the triple digits now.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay, how about your favorite series at Marvel, James? Or Eric?
James, you go first.
I guess ongoing series, I would go with Vader, even though it's ending at 25.
Yeah.
It has had really great, I mean, just consistent art, consistently good story. Even the Vader Down crossover, which I kind of rolled my eyes at when they announced it. A typical Marvel crossover where you have to buy, you know, a one-shot to kick off the series, and then you have to buy a couple issues of Star Wars to get the whole thing. I thought that was just incredibly well done. It was a great story, And I appreciate it even more because they're bringing it to a logical end and saying we can't really take the story much further than the beginning of Empire Strikes Back. So we're going to wrap it up and give people an enjoyable kind of in-between Star Wars story about a character that a lot of people love and love to hate in many instances. So I give them a lot of credit for putting out a good book and knowing when to end it.
Also, I figure Marvel will take that as the opportunity to put another Vader number one later this year.
Yeah, that too. No doubt about it. And with about 19 variant covers, too.
But of course.
Yeah, Eric. I think, so for me, Vader was definitely a strong one, but I'm going to go with Silver Surfer. I love having kind of, I consider it a palate cleanser. I love getting out of the heavy Marvel universe and just being able to kind of go off tripping in the stars. Mike and Laura Allred's art is just gorgeous to look at. The stories are fun and light, and the addition now of Dawn and giving the board to me kind of an actual name and a personality has just been really, really great. And it was nice that Silver Surfer, you know, kind of escaped a lot of the Secret Wars stuff and have to deal with that. So it's just been really a nice, consistently fun read to just jump into, get a little bit of fun, and then get out and not feel like you've got, you know, things weighing you down across the Marvel Universe. So for me, definitely Silver Surfer.
Nice. Kyle?
Mine also a more light-hearted Spider-Man Deadpool. I've really enjoyed that. I think it's been the best of the Deadpool series, and there's like half a dozen currently. But I think it's really well-written. It's got jokes that push the envelope and really hit. I think it stays true to the characters, and it's my favorite interpretation of Spider-Man and Deadpool currently at the moment, so I'm really enjoying Spider-Man Deadpool.
Mine is definitely The Vision, and I love this book. Love it, and I wish it would go on forever, but alas, it probably will not. But yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it. How about new series in Marvel?
I'd start with, well, I'm going to name two books for this. The Daredevil Punisher miniseries. I've really, really been enjoying that. I like that I think they gave it a pretty serious tone that I don't want to say that had been missing in the Mark Waid Daredevil run, but because his Daredevil one run was great, but I really liked that the tone kind of skewed more towards a Frank Miller feel. And I really, really like that series. And you know what? I'll hold the other one off for the next question. So maybe, Eric, you want to jump in?
I missed that one. How many issues was that?
As far as I know, there's two. Are there more issues out? I've read two.
Huh.
But yeah, it's been a pretty good series so far. And Daredevil is in his like 90s sort of black costume. So at the very least, look into it. I thought it was a pretty good book from what I've read so far.
And who's the writer?
I don't know how to pronounce his name. Is the problem? Even though I've met the man, is it Charles Soule?
Oh, Soule, yeah.
Soule. Yeah. Okay. Well, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Okay. So he's doing a Daredevil Punisher book.
Yep. Yeah. It's a Daredevil Punisher crossover book. So it's been pretty
completely.
Cool. Yeah, it's worth checking out.
Go ahead, Eric.
All right, for me, it's Spider-Man Deadpool. I think that's been kind of the series that I've really jumped onto the most. That's a new series. For me, I don't read as much Marvel as I do DC and Image, so my pool of candidates was very slim. So Spider-Man Deadpool, for the same reasons that Kyle talked about with mm-hmm. why it's his favorite series, just pretty funny, true to the characters, or at least a true representation that I want to read, and yeah. Very lighthearted and enjoyable.
Mine is Spider-Man. I really like Miles Morales. He is my favorite. And I've kind of lost a little luster with the mainline title, and so I really enjoy this one. I think it seems like it's been a while since we've had an issue, but I like it every time it comes out, and I like hanging out with Miles Morales a lot. So fun, it's a fun series. How about favorite single issue for Marvel?
We don't care what my opinion is on that one.
Did I skip you?
You, of course, did. And just simply because you skipped me, I'm going to do two, as I normally do.
I'm going to go get a beer. Just tell me what Kyle's was when you get back.
All-new Wolverine. Of course, Tom Taylor and his interpretation on X-23, which I never really cared about again before this, but I've enjoyed the writing on that. I've enjoyed her as a character, and I've enjoyed the lull we've had without an actual Wolverine within the Marvel Universe. And International Iron Man. We've only had four issues of that so far, but I like kind of the different take on Iron Man, kind of the more intimate, where you're just focusing on Tony Stark and his search for his biological parents and the lost love from 20-some-odd years ago that he had when he was in college and how that impacts him in his current day. So International Iron Man and All-New Wolverine are my two favorite new series.
Okay. This is ridiculous. Shut up. I gave you the one and 1A before. You can't keep doing two.
I do have a category with three, so just FYI.
We are going to run out of cowies before we get to the end of this.
There's only so many cowies to go around.
We don't have enough gift baskets in the back for all these people to get their lavish prizes with.
I'm down to 30 ounces of pineapple juice, too.
Best single issue.
So for me, for Eric, it's Spider-Man Deadpool number one.
Okay.
It was just a fun little way to kick things off and really got me excited for what that run was going to be. So that's going to be the one I go with.
Cool. My pick is, it will probably surprise the heck out of Eric, but I went with Avengers Standoff Assault on Pleasant Hill Alpha. And it's going to surprise you because it's a Nick Spencer book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of. But I really, really loved this book. I thought it's got my favorite Marvel villain, who shouldn't necessarily be a villain, Baron Zemo. And he is sort of back in his kind of early to mid-90s swaggering villain, but kind of an anti-villain status in this book. Like, he's righteously pissed off that he's been kept in this prison with, you know, no due process, no civil rights. And so he's got a bunch of his old Thunderbolts guys, and they're, you know, just ready to rock and roll. And I thought the art was fantastic. And being able to see my favorite villain kind of back to his old tricks and at least for the time being in the beginning, looking like he's going to come out on top, I really appreciated that.
Fantastic.
So that would be my pick.
Kyle, what 17 issues did you enjoy this year?
I simply picked one, and kind of to tag up, mine was Spider-Man Deadpool number 4.
Oh, wow.
The issue where Spider-Man and Deadpool kind of have a breakthrough and actually go out for a night on the town. It's nice to see them break down that wall. And the relationship that Deadpool so sorely needed comes out, and for the first time in a while for the Peter Parker that we have, he has a good time, and it was a good, fun issue, and I laughed out loud on it.
Yeah, you were on this series way before me and put me onto it, and it was really good. Good call. I'm kind of in the Deadpool vein with you. I gave it to the Deadpool 13, the 4-issue crossover in one that they just came out with, and I thought that was pretty darn inventive, pretty amazing to do an entire crossover in one issue, and it was a lot of fun. Very well done. Your favorite Marvel writer? James?
I'm going to go with Charles, now that I know how to pronounce his name, Soule, just because of the Daredevil Punisher miniseries. That would be my pick.
I'm going to go with Joe Kelly from Spider-Man Deadpool, and I think that the big reason I'm going to do that is, James, you pointed me way back, quite a few months ago, to Joe Kelly's run on Deadpool as kind of being the quintessential Deadpool run, and I can't agree with you more. He gets the character. It's so much fun Yay. To read, and
he gets the character because he sort of made the character.
Yeah, I believe
character
he was the first person to break the fourth wall, I believe.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. He was just a wisecracking, you know, Rob Liefeld mercenary before Joe Kelly really got a hold of him, so he kind of made him what he is today.
Huh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yep, so I'm going to go with Joe Kelly. It's been really great to see him back writing Deadpool, and I hope that this Spider-Man Deadpool run that's now been switched from a mini to an ongoing continues strong, because he gets it, and boy, it's sure a lot of fun to read.
Kyle?
I am going with the Mr. Nick Spencer, partially for his much maligned Captain America issue that got him in some hot water, and I really enjoy the humor of Ant-Man. I like the little references that they usually hit right on my alley, but be it a Star Wars or obscure 90s pop culture reference. So I like the way he's been writing some things. He, you know, had a little bit of difficulty in a couple of Ant-Man where he went a little sad sack for a while. But he's got a sense of humor that I quite enjoy.
I went with Ryan North for his work on The Incredible Squirrel Girl, which...
What?
Yeah. I love his humor. I love his writing style, and I love the way he puts a book together. And he does some really inventive stuff that makes me, like Eric's Silver Surfer, it's a palate cleanser for me. It really is nice to put down a stack of books and then switch it up for a Squirrel Girl issue, have some fun, and then get back into the serious business of comics. How about favorite Marvel artist?
All right.
Well, I'll kick this off with...
Yeah, go ahead, James.
You want to take it?
Nope, you go ahead.
Okay, all right. I'll kick it off with one that is sort of an unorthodox pick, but I'm going to go with Alex Maleev. The fact that Scarlet didn't come out for about 3 years, and then they double-shipped 2 issues in 2 weeks, I thought was... a really dumb publishing move, but Maleev's art looks incredible. I mean, it's some of the best interior work, I think, on any comic that's out today. And, you know, if you'd asked me a month ago, I wouldn't have been able to say that for a couple of years. But since they decided to put 2 issues out, I'm definitely going to go with Maleev.
Okay.
Yeah, and on my side, I have to go with the team of Mike and Laura Allred for Silver Surfer. Mike gets a lot of the love for the art, but without Laura's colors, that it just doesn't work as well. So I have to give it to them. The way that they bring a lot of that pop color into the artwork, it's in space, so there's always a natural dark background. But to have all the bright and vibrant colors to play off of, really, it's just a feast for the eyes. I absolutely love it. The clean line work. And especially the way that they're able to make the surfer emote, even though he's reflective and he does, you know, he's got his face, but his body language speaks, and it's beautiful. And as well as the board being able to see to me, have emotion is just it's wonderful. So Mike and Laura Allred.
Did you like Art Ops at all?
I have a couple of issues in the box sitting next to me, but I have not dug into it yet. And part of that is because I don't remember if it was you or if John, when you were doing a review, was kind of like a little off on it. And it seemed like it was more on the writing angle. So I just thought, well, I'll keep those here until I hit dry spell.
Yeah, we both hated it.
Yeah. So it's there percolating.
Yeah. The art was kind of pretty in places, though. Kyle?
I'm going with something I can't pronounce, so here goes. Katie Niemczyk, and that is your artist on Mockingbird. Oh. And one thing that always stood out to that is I love the line work. I love what she does on Mockingbird. There's always really creative things in the heading pages where they kind of do the doctor's script work or the physician's write-up on her. And it's kind of the closest thing you get to some of that David Aja stuff where you'll go and there'll be kind of a letterhead, which is, well, how to kick down a door, don't lead with your foot, do this, always wear comfortable shoes kind of thing. And I like the way she sets that up, what she does with it. And like I said, the art's been really, really good on that. And that is my pick.
That was a close second for my best new series, Mockingbird. It's been fun.
Yeah.
My favorite artist at Marvel is Greg Smallwood. Love his panel layouts, love his inventiveness, and I love the way he renders Moon Knight. So, good stuff.
Yeah, that was a good book, too.
Yeah. Both volumes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Both volumes in the first half of 2016. A book you wish more people read, guys?
I'll just kick this off with Scarlet again, because now for two reasons. One, yeah, they shipped 2 issues of a book that hasn't come out since 2013. But the other reason is, if you want to get in on the ground floor of what could be a cool pop culture phenomenon, apparently Cinemax is going to be making a TV show out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have an excuse to jump on and read the book. They're actually putting issues out. I know Bendis likes to light cigars with $100 bills these days, but he decided to bless us with putting a few issues out, and I think everyone should pick up the first trade and then pick up the issues that came out in the last month and get caught up before the show comes out.
So there's like 8 issues total?
There's 10 issues.
10 issues.
Yep. Yeah, the 10th issue came out, I think it was just last week.
Okay.
And then 2 weeks prior to that, issue 9 came out, and then issue 8 came out. Issue 7 came out in 2013. So, yeah, they were not on any kind of regular release schedule with that.
Eric.
Yeah, so for me, I wish more people would read Silver Surfer. I think that it's a book that spans audiences to both the experienced comic reader and the Marvel Universe lover, but I also think that it's a book that can extend to kids, especially younger girls. We hear a lot about how Ms. Marvel is a book that, you know, teen and teenage girls should really get into because it's empowering. I think that there's really something in Silver Surfer for that same age group. I've got some coworkers of mine who have daughters that are in the 9 to 14 range, and I've recommended Silver Surfer, and they absolutely love it. I think they enjoy it because it is visually very captivating, but having Dawn being that strong grounding force for Norrin, I think really is something that kids can latch onto. And it's a shame that because Silver Surfer is not a part of the mainstream Marvel Universe and the cinematic and the Netflix realm of things, he really kind of gets overlooked. And, you know, I like it for that. And when we get kids that come into the shop, parents that have those kids, I'm usually trying to at least show them Silver Surfer and tell them that it's out there, give them a little bit of the background behind it. And sometimes they go for it, sometimes they don't. But that's one that I really wish more people would read because I think it's a fun book and an easy one for a lot of folks to get into that maybe aren't as steeped in the Marvel history as a lot of other readers.
Does Fox still own Silver Surfer?
They do. Yeah. They own everything associated with the Fantastic Four license. Even, well, actually, I think Marvel just worked out the rights to Namor. But even for a while, I think there was a conflict with Namor. So they've got Fantastic Four, the Skrulls, Galactus, Silver Surfer, all sorts of cool stuff. Dr. Doom.
And are running it into the ground.
Oh, my God, I know. I think more people want Marvel to get Dr. Doom back than the Fantastic Four. But probably won't happen for a while.
Yeah. Kyle, what's the book you wish more people would read?
I have written down here, please make Silk more popular than Spider-Gwen, because I think it's a much better character, and it drives me nuts that Spider-Gwen continues to eclipse it and is just god-awful. So, Silk, please take the reins on that one.
But you know what drives Spider-Gwen? I'm sure a lot of people love the series, but I tell you, I see almost as many people cosplay as Spider-Gwen as do Poison Ivy these days. It is a great costume.
It's very visually striking.
The book is great. Yeah, and the other thing, it's a cool, safe costume for younger girls. Mm.
Yep. And hoodies, really comfortable. So.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
it's Moon Knight for me, the newest volume. Please, somebody read this book so it doesn't get canceled in the teens again.
What is this, the 14th volume?
Seventh.
I don't know. I think the numbers are pretty strong on this one, at least in our shop. It's had a steady increase of subscribers and readers. So I think we started off getting a couple, and now we're up to half a dozen subscribers or so.
Yeah,
so it's growing in our shop.
Yeah, for Moon Knight, we're adding 2 people a month since the first issue came out, which is incredible growth on a third-tier Marvel book for us. So it's doing something right.
Yeah, or maybe the combination of Lemire and Smallwood. This is it. Maybe this is the magic.
Oh, Lemire is great. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Well, let's slide over to Image, one of our favorite publishers over at Comics for Fun and Profit. And what's the hottest selling Image book for you guys?
It's well, it's there's two books. And it's kind of interesting how it's ended up shaping out in the last year. Walking Dead is easily our hottest seller, but we have more people that are subscribed to Saga. And what I have seen has been a lot of people dropping Walking Dead as a subscription book. And we, you know, some of them we see again.
Dropping it?
Well, no, there's people that are normally subscribing to it are dropping it. And some of them we see again when they come in to pick up a trade. Some of them will come in to just randomly pick the issues up off the shelf. So we always have to have a good amount of Walking Dead on the shelf. But we have had a couple subscribers tell us that they decided to switch over to Image's new home subscription delivery service. So they're getting the books, and I think it shakes out to about $2.49 an issue straight from Image, which is sort of annoying because as a retailer, I look at it as is this is what Image is saying the new SRP is supposed to be because that's what they're selling it at. So we've lost subscribers that have gone over to that, but our sales on the book are still as steady as ever. Whereas Saga doesn't have as many people coming in to buy the monthly books, but it's got a very, very healthy subscriber base that would never drop the book.
Yeah. Yeah, count me among those. I'll never drop it.
There you go.
We just keep adding issues and issues every month.
Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that.
Kyle, you got anything to chime in there?
Yeah. I mean, this was the year that it was good to sell Walking Dead. Between the catapult of issue 100, which we speculated on with there being so many, would it increase in value? It sure did. To hitting with that cover C of issue 150.
Oh, yeah.
So Walking Dead has been a great year for the secondary market, and I've been holding and holding and holding, and this seems like a time when it's good to flip it. Even you're able to sell your 127s for a big price because of the Outcast first appearance in it.
Well, 108 is going nuts, too. We can't keep 108 on the shelf at the shop.
Yeah, the first appearance of Ezekiel.
Yeah, because there was some... I remember seeing something where they had like a cut scene where they found like a tiger paw print in the season finale or something. And that book is going crazy. That's a hard one for us to keep on the shelf at like $20 per issue. So that's a great book to have right now.
Oh, yeah.
What is your favorite Image series?
Walking Dead. That's an easy one. I've been reading it since it came out, as you guys know, I have to stick to Walking Dead. And that's the one book that when Diamond shows up with our delivery, I'll stop whatever I'm doing and I will read Walking Dead. Yeah, it's a 5-minute read, but it is pretty darn fulfilling every issue.
There aren't any bad issues.
No, there aren't. And everything that they've got going on right now, you know that he's building to something, and it's been so masterfully done ever since the 127 kind of time jump. I've loved everything.
Yeah, for me, I am not a Walking Dead reader. I also don't watch the TV show.
Boo. Boo.
I know, right?
You're a zombieist.
However, I'm looking at my bookshelf, and I see compendiums 1 and 2. I am halfway through the first compendium, but... for me, my favorite Image series, this is really tough. The favorite series that I have right now that is still ongoing is Revival. It's just fantastic.
Great one.
But there's one series that beats it out that's put on hold, and that's Black Magic.
Yeah, that was good. That was really only, what, 4 issues, though?
I think it was 5 issues in the first trade, and now it's on hiatus for Wonder Woman. But, oh my gosh, that book was...
It was pretty...
Oh, yeah, and the storytelling, of course. I mean, Rucka is a genius. Mm-hmm. But back to my pick, Revival. Tim Seeley, Mike Norton. So for me, I think part of the reason why I don't get into Walking Dead as much is the black and white thing kind of throws me off sometimes. And even more so than that, I feel like the story can get long and drawn out. And something about Revival is always, there's always fresh things. James and I have talked numerous times about the book, and there's really only one arc of Revival that was kind of a take it or leave it arc, and that was when we end up in New York City. But outside of that, man, that series has just been so solid. And on top of it, you know, getting to talk to those guys, whether it's at C2E2 or through emails or whatever, really, really nice guys to talk to. So yeah, for me, it's...
Hey, how'd
it's
you hear about Revival, Eric?
Some goofball in a comic shop was like, hey, you should check this out. It's a cool book.
Oh, cool. All right, good to know.
No, they're from...
Drew, I smell a Wisconsin Homer pick on that one.
Are they from...
Which, No, they live in Chicago area. So
okay,
but the book's out of Wisconsin. Sure. It takes place in Wisconsin.
I thought Seeley or Norton, one of them was from Wisconsin.
I think
Wisconsin.
Seeley's from Wisconsin originally, maybe, but they both definitely.
I mean, that's all you
Chicago
need.
But you guys get it. I know you get it.
Yeah,
so you
was
know
born
it's a
in
good
Wisconsin.
Book.
Oh yeah.
So yeah,
well,
that's mine.
I stopped reading it. I stopped reading it during the New York transition.
Yeah, there. I mean, it was a slog for a couple of issues, but it. I think
get
they
on,
realized
man.
That and righted it.
I know.
Really quick.
I meant to catch up before it ends so that I can finish with everybody else.
And it's going
to
end at what? 47?
47, 48, something like that.
Is it? Yeah. Or are they going to try and shoot for 50? I'd heard at one point they were going to try and end it on 50. I don't know if that's still the case.
C2E2, he said, I think, 48.
Okay.
But he may have changed.
Who knows?
Yeah, Kyle?
I've got like 14 things written down here because, man, I got a lot of, you know.
You can only pick your top 13.
Okay, then deal. Outcast. I'm still really enjoying Outcast and really enjoying the show as well. Of course, Walking Dead and Saga.
So you're really gonna run down a list.
And then a special note to Southern Bastards. I'm done. That's it. Just four. I stopped at four.
Okay.
Those are 1A through D.
You know, I'm actually, you said Southern Bastards. I'm kind of surprised that Jason Aaron didn't get any love in the Marvel section. He seems like he's writing half of the Marvel Universe right now.
He really, that, I love his Thor run, but those last two issues still irk me.
Yeah, they were bad. My favorite series is Southern Bastards, and so it's the very, if when it's out, it's the first thing I read, and I love it, and I wish it was out more frequently. But
why isn't that an HBO show? I mean, that would be just perfect.
Well, it would be lovely.
Yeah, I love that book too. There's no doubt, it's a great book.
I have a feeling there's not a lot of suspense on new series for Kyle and I. So I'm going to throw it to you guys and see if you guys can mix it up for us.
Go ahead, James.
Well, I guess with Image, I got to be honest, I haven't read a ton of new series. One that I started that I think I'm two or three issues behind on. It's a newer series, but I was here's that language warning. But I started reading Bitch Planet, and I liked it. I thought it was a neat sort of pulpy grindhouse throwback feel to it. And,
how many issues are you in?
Oh gosh, I'm four issues in.
Okay, that'll fade.
So, okay. Oh no!
Spoiler. I loved it through the first trade, and then you'll see.
Okay. So I liked it. I mean, I'll be honest. Black Magic. Eric mentioned Black Magic. Mm-hmm. I did really like Black Magic too.
You actually read it?
I read the first three issues.
I'm so proud of you.
you pretty much made me.
Pretty much.
I mean, yeah.
You revivaled me, so I Black Magic'd you.
Smart man.
That
well,
dirty.
I am not going to pick Black Magic because it started before the new year. But
Bitch Planet was from 2014, but we'll
oh god!
But I'll stick with the black theme.
I'm just
going to
hang up right now.
I'm going to go with Black Road.
Very nice.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. I think the third issue's out now. It's been, you know, Magnus and kind of getting off on the road here with Brian Wood is always a good story. So. Yeah, Black Road has been the newest series I think that has started this year. Otherwise, I was doing the same thing James was, and I was kind of like, all right, what am I reading? Well, Paper Girls, nope, that started in 2015. Yep, Black Magic, 2015. So, yeah, for me, Black Road.
Oops.
It's okay, James. Some of us live in 2016, some don't.
Hey, we
I live in the 80s.
We let Kyle list four things for one of the categories, so... Kyle, what's the best new series of this year so far?
That would be The Fix.
Oh, I knew that was coming.
Imagine that. The book that I've given my book of the week for three different months is my favorite new series. I really enjoy it. The characters are really, really likable. The humor is there, and I love the story.
Ditto. Favorite single issue, guys, from Image.
Hey, I can do this one. The Ed Brubaker Criminal 10th Anniversary one-shot.
Oh,
that was awesome. Anything Brubaker does is He's never written anything that was even average. I think everything he's done is above average, and so a new criminal one-shot coming out, it's just a no-brainer. And Sean Phillips, 64 pages of art. That's it. I'm done.
That was a close one for me, but I actually went with Black Magic number 5, partly because we start to really get into the magic side of things with the way the characterizations are plotting out. We've got both the police precinct work and then with Rowan and her partner whose wife is pregnant, so you know that that's going to come into play somehow with some of the the home and protection things that she's working on for him. And then you've got the magic side, the Wiccan, and I can't remember off the top of my head who the high priestess of their little order is, but trying to figure out who is after Rowan. And you see her kind of get into a battle, and then it ends with this huge cliffhanger with this table of whatever they are. I'm not too sure what they are right now, basically saying she's ready. And then to go on this extended break for Wonder Woman was just a killer, but still such a wonderful issue. It just really left me salivating for more. So Black Magic number 5.
Guile?
I have The Fix number 1, but since we've been talking about The Fix, I really enjoyed the spectacle of Walking Dead 150. I mean, we got a little bit of stuff happen there, but just what that issue meant and was and the different covers and everything. Just my favorite thing that came out from Image was that 150th issue of Walking Dead and just what it was and how far I'd gotten and that whole event.
Yeah, that was cool. I gave it to No Mercy number 9. This is a book that was written by Alex DeCampi with art by Carla Speed McNeil. And this story in particular was about a girl who her parents tried to fix the gay away from her, out of her, by sending her off to this camp. And she goes through some horrible abuse while she's there. And you're reading this story with this of this girl, and bad things happen, you know, and at the end there's just like a laundry list. I don't know if you've seen the movie Spotlight, but there's just this laundry list of kids' names that have been sent to these camps and died in them, and it's all these real people's names where these camps or groups or organizations have actually killed these kids trying to change them. And it was an incredibly powerful standalone story and a pretty darn good series anyway. But it was really amazing. It came out back in April, and it's really something I think about occasionally because it was just such a really strong book and made me really appreciate that this series all the more, and makes me want to continue to support that because of what a good job she did on this issue. It was really, really great. Kind of a downer pick.
Yeah, no kidding.
Who's your favorite writer at Image?
James,
go with Moneybags, Robert Kirkman. Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually, you know what? I'll go with Brubaker because I do love Kirkman on Walking Dead, and I will admit I have not read very much of Outcast, and Invincible sort of comes out sporadically now.
Yeah,
but I love Kirkman, but I'll go with Brubaker because, again, everything he does is just A-game stuff. So I'm going to have to give it to him. I even really liked, I know some people were split on the wrap-up of Fade Out, but I really like that too. So
yeah, it was good.
Well, dang you. I was going to say Brubaker.
Oh!
So I guess with that being said, I'll go with Greg Rucka. You know, Lazarus, Black Magic, the guy can just create worlds and really get you pulled into what he's writing. Just phenomenal books coming out of him right now. So I'll go with Greg Rucka since my original choice of Ed Brubaker was picked.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Guile.
Rucka was on my list, but since he's taken, I'm going to go back to BKV, and until somebody takes it away from him, it's his to keep going with.
Uh-huh. Good call. I'm going to give it to Robert Kirkman. I came late on the Invincible train, but that's a good 1-2 punch between Invincible and Walking Dead. Really strong. And Outcast is all right.
It's great.
It's great. Who's the your favorite image artist?
I'll go with Sean Phillips, just to tack on to the Brubaker pick for the writer, because again, those two guys, whenever they work together, anything they do is just, it's going to be the best stuff on the stand when it comes out. So, so go Sean Phillips. Sean Phillips.
I have to go with Nicola Scott. She,
not a shock.
You're right. She has this unique ability to draw women, especially, just amazingly beautiful without over-sexualizing them. And her clever way of adding color in Black Magic to the scenes where magic is being used to draw emphasis to them is really, really well done. And the way that she shades everything, to me, in the book, you don't even realize that there's an absence of color. Whereas, like with Walking Dead, it's very black and white. And to have the heavy shading that she does is just gorgeous. So I'm going to go with Nicola Scott, and also add the caveat that I am very much looking forward to her year one based work with Rucka on Wonder Woman.
Kyle?
I'm going to sneak two in again on this one, so I want to give a little bit of love to Greg Ticini for his art on Low.
Wonderful.
I really like the art on Low. But, of course, Jamie McKelvey, thank you for coming back to Wicked and Divine. It doesn't get any better than that art. And, of course, when you talk about that, you've got to say thank you, Matt Wilson, on color, because that book has beautiful, wonderful art, and the colors just fly off the page.
Yeah. Like all those. My favorite artist at Image, though, is still Fiona Staples. And I had to give Saga a little bit of love because it's great week, month in, month out. I love her art. I just love it.
I gotta throw one more name out there. Since I only picked one, I would give my runner up to Cliff Chang for Paper Girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just that perfect Cliff Chang style, and you know, everything from the down to earth to the crazy aliens is just it's a visual treat. So he was my second runner up, and I wanted to make sure he got called.
And you know, Paper Girls was losing me for a while, and then this last issue
got you right back.
Oh man, it's got me hook, line, and sinker. It's awesome. It was awesome.
That jump to the modern time and the whole like, how do we afford this TV?
it was so great. Because there for a while, I just said, what is going on? Where is this thing headed? But it was really, really strong.
How dare you not trust Brian K. Vaughan?
Right?
I don't know.
You know what? We talked about BKV. We forgot to mention one thing that came out. I think it was it in print this year? Maybe it was the end of last year. Private Eye, the digital comic that got printed.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I think it did get printed. Well, no, it got printed for Christmas, didn't
was
it?
Was it for Christmas?
Yeah, it was for Christmas.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Still anyone good out there who missed picking that up, you need to go get that.
And but I think he did do the Barrier this year on Panel Syndicate.
Is that done, or is he still doing that?
Just issue one is the only one that's out.
And Walking Dead the Alien.
Yep.
Yes. I did watch. I like that, too. Book you wish more people read from Image?
Anything Brubaker, just because I'd like to be able to talk to more people about it. Although we did get a couple of local business owners, some guys that we run the pub trivia with in town. We've got them both hooked on Brubaker, so it's cool because they'll come in every once in a while and pick up whatever the new Brubaker book is, like the criminal one shot. And they'll read that, and then, you know, maybe the next day they'll just walk down and be like, oh my God, I just finished reading Criminal. Man, I love it.
And then they wipe your tab away in exchange for trade paperbacks?
Well, I don't ask for that, but if it happens, you know,
right.
Sometimes
if that happens to us, we smile
complain.
And we don't question it.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, I am going to say Autumnland's Tooth and Claw. Very similar to the Astro City that you called out, Drew. It's a Kurt Busiek book. Mm-hmm. It's definitely one of the books that I absolutely look forward to reading. And Kurt is an awesome guy to chat with, and I email him on a semi-regular basis and just kind of say, you know, man, this book is just getting better and better. There was a couple of fuzzy issues shortly after the trade break. I was kind of like, all right, where are we going? But now, all of a sudden, we're picking up steam again heading into the next trade break. So I really wish that more people would get on the Autumnlands Tooth and Claw book, because the kind of the anthropomorphic, the different beings and the different caste system that they have, and the magic that gets built in, it's just very clever, and it's obviously very well thought out, well plotted and planned. And Benjamin Dewey's art is great, and Jordi mm-hmm. Belair, I mean, she must color half of books being printed nowadays. I mean, she is just a beast, but
she must not sleep.
Yeah, either that or she's cloned. Maybe that's what it is. But yeah, it's a great book. I do wish more people would read that so that I could talk to them about it.
Do you? I really love the first arc, mm-hmm. and then this second arc is kind of drug for me. Do you like it just as well?
The first couple issues drug for me as well, but the last two issues have really started to pick up steam, and I think there's two more before we go into the next trade break that mm-hmm. are coming out. So yeah, it was a little slow to get back going, but I think part of that too was just the time.
Yeah,
you know, you read five issues and kind of really got going, and then all of a sudden it was like 4 months or 5 months off before the next one came out. So that was kind of a little bit of a killer. So what I ended up doing actually after I read the two issues 6 and 7, I think, back from the trade break, or 7 and 8, whatever it was, I went and grabbed the first 6, read them again, read the 7 and 8, and all of a sudden it kept the pace going when I got my next one. So it's picking up for me, and again, but it's still a great story. I mean, a slow Busick story is better than probably 85 to 90% of the books that are out there anyways.
Yes, yes, exactly. Kyle, what's yours?
Rat Queens, Lazarus, Rumble, Nailbiter. You pick one. They're all under-ordered.
You know, that the truth is that everything but Walking Dead and Saga could be on this list from Image, because none of them sell well enough. But for me, it is Manifest Destiny, written by Chris Dingus, art by Matthew Roberts, beautiful art, beautiful colors by Owen Gianni, the reinterpreted revisionist history of Lewis and Clark's exploration, and with monsters and zombies and great ending splash pages. And this is a part of Skybound imprint, and is just a beauty to behold, and another great book that nobody reads, sadly. Now, what I'm super curious about is some of the other publishers that sell well in your store, and some of the things that you like. So what's your hottest other publisher seller there, other titles there?
Well, our hottest independent book is actually one that might surprise you guys, but I am a big, big proponent of Valiant, and we pushed the heck out of Bloodshot Reborn when it came out. One of the main reasons is last year at C2E2, we talked with pretty much all the top Valiant guys, and they were really, really cool. They laid out their plan for Valiant and why we should buy into Valiant as a company. And the book that they used to do that was Bloodshot Reborn, which is, I think, one of the best books on the market right now. If you guys if you need something to get you into checking the book out,
yeah,
look at the double page spread for Bloodshot Reborn number 10. The art is some of the most detailed interior art I think that's being put out right now. They have a really, really great winding lineup of artists. They have Louis LaRosa, Butch Geis, Marco Suian, not sure how to pronounce his name. But the cool thing with this book is it starts out as a very, very kind of self-contained, small, almost crime story. Like it sort of put me in the vein of a Brubaker or Rucka story, and then it starts tying in to the larger Valiant universe as it goes on. But it's definitely got kind of a gritty Vertigo feel to it, and we've pushed that on a lot of our customers, and we've had a lot of people that have dropped entire pull lists but still keep Bloodshot Reborn. So it's a book that has really hooked a lot of people, and we would definitely recommend it to anybody.
Now, I am not interested in another shared universe that I have to kind of be all in and try to keep track of what's going on continuity-wise. Can I just read that and enjoy it?
Yeah, you can. And thus far, any of the crossovers that they've done, they've had Bloodshot in, there'd be a tie-in one-shot. So right now they've got the 4001 AD event, and there's a 4001 AD Bloodshot mm-hmm. one-shot that ties into it. So you can keep reading the core book, and you're not really going to lose anything if they have a giant event book out. So at the very least, pick up the first trade. I think is $9.99, and it's a heck of a good book. I would totally recommend it.
Yeah, I keep trying Valiant, keep hoping one of them will click with me. So I'm going to try that because I think I tried Faith, I tried that Archer and Armstrong reboot. Before that, I probably haven't read anything since before that.
Well,
since,
and those are both pretty lighthearted series in a way. And you know, Archer and Armstrong's goofy. Faith is sort of almost a feel good book, and the art reflects that. With Bloodshot Reborn, like I said, it's a gritty.
Yeah.
Gritty feeling book. So it may be a little bit more mature and would probably appeal to you a little bit more.
Okay. I will check that one out. That sounds cool. Eric?
Yeah, for the hottest seller stuff, I think James kind of hit it for the shop. I will add in, though, the one thing that Valiant did that kind of ticked me off was I got into Divinity and I was reading it and enjoying it, and then last issue, the first arc, and they start bringing in the entire friggin' universe, and I was like, I'm done, I'm out, I don't want this. So that really...
Bait and switch, huh?
Oh, that pissed me off. But I will echo James' sentiments, though. Not only did he meet the Valiant folks, we also met them at C2E2. They are very responsive to anything that we send to them. They want us to succeed with their books, and obviously any publisher would, but they don't force it on us in a way that is insulting, and they're telling us how to sell their books best. There's a self-published creator out there who will not be named who spent 10 minutes telling us how the best way to sell his books would be, and that's basically to just plaster our register with his books, and I don't need that because, quite honestly, there's better books that I can put there to sell. But Valiant, they present themselves very well. They have a keen eye towards quality. And I will echo James' sentiments on Bloodshot Reborn. I am not in the Valiant universe, but I do enjoy picking that book up from time to time and reading it. It is a little bit more intense than some of those other ones, and I like that. So, yeah. Drew, you should check that out. I think you might like it.
Very cool. Now, did you have the store when they were doing that limited series incentive variant series?
The Book of Death and the
the
Geomancer. Yeah, Legend of the Geomancer. Yep.
Did you have anybody that said, here's $50 for that first one, I want it?
We sure as hell did. We actually, I think we sold three of them.
Get out of here.
No, I'm dead serious. Two of them we sold out of the store, and we sold one at a show that we were set up at, and then I kept a copy for myself, and we made our cost back on buying the 100 copies of Book of Death by selling those three books. I think that actually put us well into profit.
Have you sold through those extra copies of Valiant?
Oh my
book?
God, no. I have a short box in the basement full of just Book of Death from 1 through 4. You know what? I liked it. I thought it was a good series, but it was a gimmick series with the amount of variants in that variant mini series. So what can you say?
I applaud their inventiveness.
Well, and the one thing I'll say about it is the production quality on that Book of Death, those thick covers, and that was a nice presentation.
It's paper stock wide.
Oh my gosh, that was nice. Oh, so I'll give them credit for that.
That's really cool. Kyle, anything for you want to add to this?
As far as the secondary market, Power Rangers with its zero issue and its issue number one was a great flip opportunity. A little wonky how exactly you got all the different covers for zero and wasn't as clear as I'd like it to have been when that first rolled out, and of course my ability to try to get them all. But some good money to be made there. It's slowed off as the series is going on, but a great secondary market book was that Power Rangers series.
Yeah, we had a lot of people calling from Milwaukee, from Madison, wanting to know if we had any. But what we had everyone calling to ask was, do you guys have any copies of the green or the white green Ranger or the white cover?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if so, you're not marking it up, are you? And well, no, we didn't get any. But we had a ton of people calling wanting to come pick it up at $3.99.
Wanted to get it for cover.
Right, exactly. People we've never seen before and probably will never hear from again. Just calling around. Everybody was getting in on the spec game with that book. And yep. We didn't expect it to be as big of a hit as it was, so I think we ordered about 10 copies, and we didn't get any of the green or white. So
yeah, red,
all
blue,
yellow Ranger.
I think we've actually
got a
more,
couple blue.
More red than anything.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Where are we at?
Favorite series, is that right?
Yeah, favorite series. Publishers.
Yeah, I'll jump in on that. For me, I've got a tie. James Bond from Dynamite has been really good. Warren Ellis. It's a little bit of a departure from kind of the suave and, you know, sexy looking James Bond, getting right back to the man, the mystery, the grit, not mincing words, you know, heavy action. And I tend to be tentative with Warren Ellis because I end up getting on a book and I enjoy it for 3 issues and then it just strays off into this meadow and never seems to come back. But for this one, he wrapped up Varga really well. So got the next, I think the first issue of the next arc that's in my stack to read. So that's one. And then the other one, which started late last year, is Claws from Boom.
Oh, yeah. So
Grant
good.
Morrison, Dan Mora, holy Moses. I mean, you knew there was going to be that Grant Morrison acid trippy scene, and it came right away in the end of that first issue with the...
and that was pretty much it.
And that's been it so far. And, yeah. And oh, my gosh, that has been a heck of a story. You guys commented on, I think it might have been you, Drew, that commented, geez, it would have been great to have this all buttoned up and ready for Christmas, but... You know, it's been coming out every 6 weeks-ish,
mm-hmm.
So it'll be in trade for this next Christmas, and I'm probably going to end up getting 4 or 5 of these to give out because it has been a very, very enjoyable series, a great take on the Santa Claus lore, and a little extra depth to it in that in the way that Grant is doing it. There's been similar takes in both novel and other graphic forms, but... I think it's going just a bit farther, and I like it. It's been really, really compelling to read.
Yeah, we've got one more single issue. Then they can put out a nice hardcover.
Yep.
Then they can put out a nice trade, and they'll all be ready to go for this Christmas, and that'll be sweet. That'll be a fun gift to give, I think.
And I'm waiting for my I did order for myself the special black and white pencils that Dan Mora did. I think it was issues 1 and 2. It was like a $14.99 cover price, but it was oversized.
That, yeah.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that to come in because the artwork has equally matched, if not maybe surpassed a little bit, the writing in some areas. It's just been really well done.
All right, James, don't let me down. I know where you're going to go with this. You and
do
you? You and me, buddy. We love this series. Come on,
Cross Plus 100.
Yeah, there you go.
Was that where you're going to go?
I was going to go with the regular, with Cross Badlands, but...
Okay. I would go with Plus 100. The Alan Moore run, I thought, kicked off kind of slow, but he was doing a lot of world building. And then it hit that fifth issue, and things just kind of went nuts. It was just crazy. I loved it.
Now, when you first started reading Plus 100 and the language... Was it like just you thought, what is going on here?
Well, it was. I knew it was Alan Moore doing what he does best. I remember reading the lead up to it, a bunch of interviews with him where he talked about he had written like a 200-page Bible for the Cross series and how everything from like how fauna.
It's Garth Ennis, though, right?
No, that was Alan Moore doing that. Cross Plus 100.
Okay, Ennis started Crossed.
Yeah, Ennis started Cross. He did the original miniseries.
But you're saying Alan Moore did a 200-page Bible for the Plus 100.
Correct.
Oh,
correct.
Interesting.
He wrote this giant book, which was basically a guide for himself, for ever since the Cross outbreak, in the 100 years in between that, this is what happened. And he did minutia from, in this small geographic section, this is what the plant life would be like now without humans around. It was really, really, really incredibly detailed. And so I remember reading that he passed on a lot of that information and those details to the guy who's doing the art. So there was a lot to find in every panel. I don't want to say it was like Watchmen thick with the references, but every little item that was placed in the panel was there for a reason, because Alan Moore had written these gigantic scripts for each issue. So when he left the series with issue 6, I was not sure where the book would go. But the guy who took over is Cy Spurrier.
Yeah.
And he's been doing a great job. He did Cross Wish You Were Here, that webcomic.
Yeah.
Which was also great. Also and so good, he he picked it up, and I really love the direction that they're going with it. And the cool thing I think about Plus 100 is that it's not violence just for violence sake, like a lot of the Cross stories tend to be. Ennis was violent, and Wish You Were Here was certainly violent, but they were both really, really great psychological horror stories. And I think too many Cross stories end up just being almost kind of, you know, splatter porn for no real reason. I don't think Badlands has for the last couple of arcs, but I think there have been some people, like Lapham stuff, I thought was always kind of disposable and a little too, you know, let's see how, like, in what's the most creative way we can kill this person, and then the twist is that the person doing the killing is not a Cross, you know, and that the people that are alive are worse than the Cross. And anyway, 100 kind of jettisoned that, and it's going in a really, really interesting direction, where they're almost trying to work with these evolved, advanced Cross, and it's not going in the direction that you would expect it to go in. So I've been really impressed with the book.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Who's next?
Eric?
Nope, I went first. I had James Bond and Claws.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
James, you can give your actual pick that you wanted before Drew bullied you into doing the Cross.
No, that's, I've got that written down right now on our OneDrive document, so go ahead.
I also had Klaus, but since that one's already taken, I want to say I'm still ashamedly a big fan of the new revamped Archie series. So I, oddly enough, still look forward to Archie every single time it comes out. Still enjoying even the Veronica Fish art. So, still like an Archie.
Mm-hmm. And I think I prefer the Cross Badlands series over 100, but they're both really good. And I enjoy the splatter porn portion of it.
I like some of it. Again, Lapham stuff always went a little too far, I thought. But the Smokey arc, I like that they went back to him. He was always a good character.
Yeah, and looks like that's where we're going to end for the next issue. We're going to end on Smokey and his smart girls, kind of.
Yeah.
And
well, next week's previews is supposed to have the return of Garth Ennis to Cross. So
also, it's not going to be going very long.
No, he's coming back, because normally they would do, every year they had that C-Day where they would have Ennis jumping back on, and they skipped it this year. They used to send Cross masks out to comic stores, and they kept pushing it back, and he's going to do a 16-issue series called Once a Warrior King, which apparently is supposed to be like the final, not final, because I'm sure they'll milk it for all it's worth, but it's supposed to be like his final word on Cross. So I'm looking forward to that.
Kyle, if you ever thought there was a bigger Cross fan in the world, you now know there is.
They're not allowed to be in the same room together.
Well, when you guys come up to the Milwaukee area, we'll just let them go talk Cross for an hour, and we'll go do something productive.
I love it.
All right. Best new series. Other publisher.
Well, we kind of talked about, my wife just got home. We kind of talked about Valiant, and I actually really liked Archer and Armstrong. I thought it was, I thought it had a nice bit of humor to contrast what Bloodshot offered. I thought the first issue came out pretty strong and has kept up the high quality ever since. Mm-hmm. So I would go with Archer and Armstrong.
Okay.
I am going to go with Brutal Nature.
Ooh.
This is a book that I don't think very many people are aware of or getting. It's a kind of a historical look in Colombia of the Spaniards coming to basically take over Colombia. And the story circles around a Colombian native named Ich, who is able to turn himself into a number of different beasts or monsters by putting on different masks. There's two issues out right now. It's a four-issue miniseries, and it's being written by Luciano Saracino, and the art is by Ariel Olivetti. And many people know who Olivetti is and a lot of the work mm-hmm. that's been done. It's just, it's very, very striking. The storytelling is a little bit different because it is supposed to be somewhat of a historical take, but then also with this added fantasy of the masks and turning from, basically each is kind of like this, if you look at him, you wouldn't think he's a very opposing looking figure. He's not very big. He's obviously muscular because he's, you know, living out in the wild in the jungle. But when he puts on these masks, he can become these big bears and, you know, jaguars and things like that. So he becomes these big beasts, and he's basically, the Spaniards are trying to invade. They're trying to take over Colombia, and they're kind of laughing all along the way, scaring locals and saying, you know, geez, what do you have? You're not going to really fight us or push us back. You don't have guns. You've got nothing. And then each comes out with these masks on and starts scaring them away, and he's trying to protect the land. So it's a really interesting story. The writing is not really heavy storyline driven. It's more pieces of different sections of day-to-day life. But it's very interesting. And I'm kind of a history guy on the side. I really do like different aspects of history all around the world and how different empires grew or failed, things like that. So I've really gotten into it, and Olivetti's art is fantastic. There's two covers to each book. There's kind of a standard cover, and then there's a variant subscriber cover that has really cool old-looking art style. I guess I'd say old-looking because it looks vintage. It's on kind of a different paper style color as opposed to just the plain white, and they're pictures of a mask and then what each turns into, the character that he turns into in the book, and I find those to be really cool. So I've really enjoyed the first two issues and looking forward to the second two that are going to come out for this one. So for me, it's Brutal Nature.
And that's IDW, Kyle. And you've been looking for an IDW book to call your own.
There you go.
That sounds really good.
It's really cool. I'm interested to see how they wrap it up.
The cover does look a little... I can see why we would have passed on it, Kyle. I remember seeing that now.
The main one or the subcover?
The number one issue.
Look for the number one sub cover.
Okay. I'll do that later.
Yeah, totally.
Kyle, what's your best new series?
New series, Black Eyed Kids from Aftershock Comics. I've really enjoyed that. Through three now. It's just creepy and super well done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I know what's going on, but they may pull the wool over my eyes. We'll see, but Black Eyed Kids.
Oh. Did you ever listen to Art Bell as a kid?
I did not.
Oh, on, you know, somewhere Coast to Coast AM. Yeah, where the people would call in when I worked third shift, they would always listen to Coast, and it was all the people that would call in. Yesterday, I had some Black Eyed Kids try to jimmy their way into my car at a stop sign. They had no souls. So anytime I see that, I think of my old third shift with the kooks that would call in at 2 a.m.
For me, it is Super Zero by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor from Aftershock. This has been super fun and really surprised how much I liked it. It's really great, and you should definitely check this out.
Oh, I completely forgot about Aftershock.
Oh, you can't forget about Aftershock. All right,
Kyle, say yours, and if you don't say the other one that I would say from Aftershock, we got to call it out.
All right.
I was going to say, I did my Aftershock Black Eyed Kids, and that's all I had.
Okay. Yeah, the other one that I would call out is Rough Riders.
Yeah, no doubt.
Rough Riders is so good.
Yeah. I can't believe I forgot about that. Oh, my gosh.
Favorite single issue from another publisher?
I can start that one. I would go... It's actually kind of a tie between two Avatar books. One of them would be... Providence 8, and the other would be Providence 9. Have any of you guys been reading Providence?
Is so good.
It is incredible. Talk about a dense book.
So detailed.
Who's
the artist on that? Man, it's amazing.
It's Jason Burroughs.
Yeah. Our cross guy. Oh, yeah.
Well, she's not crossed again.
I know.
It's yeah.
This awesome. This book in some ways is even more messed up than Crossed is. In issue 8, where they had that weird body switching scene.
I don't think that I'm was for that one yet.
Okay. Everything he did, every issue of the book that comes out makes me go back and reread every issue that has come before.
You can't read. You can't read Providence in bed late at night like I like to read comics. Because you have to study it and slowly turn the pages, and it's amazing. Yeah,
it's going to make a really, really great annotated, gigantic bookshelf volume.
Oh, yeah.
But I would go with Providence 8 or 9 just because each issue has probably taken... I joke that Walking Dead is a five-minute read, and it's a great book. Providence can be about a 45-minute read. Because in addition to the actual... the paneling telling the story, there are no ads in this book. Every single page is devoted to some sort of... It's very much like Watchmen, where after the book or the story ends, maybe the last four pages that would usually be ads, it's something where Alan Moore has written a letter that from the perspective of one of the characters in the book, and then there's a journal that one of the characters was keeping, and you read this stuff, and it just... He's got things so layered that every single issue is sort of a full experience. It's really, really good.
Yes. Top that, Eric.
Boom. Headshot.
For me, I'm going to go with Revisionist number one.
Oh.
It's been, the first issue came out. It's by Fred Van Lente. It's one of those books where I don't know where it's quite going to go, but the first book that we get, it's good, man. I think it's gonna be really good. It's
how much did you want them, the prisoner and the guard to live happily ever after? In that first, I was like, oh, look at that, he's gonna get out, they're gonna go get a drink.
Yep,
and I was rooting for him from like page four. It was amazing.
And I think I just said Fred Van Lente. It's Frank Barbieri. I misspoke on that, but yeah, it really kind of it got me kind of jonesing to get the next issue in my hands, so it's going to be interesting. It's Gary Brown doing the art, and he's also doing one of the other books I called out, Black Road, and he's done The Massive, so he's got some work out there as well. But yeah, for me, I think it's going to be, it could be, has the makings to be one of those kind of Brian Wood or BKV type series where you just really get hooked on it and you keep going. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Revisionist number two looks like.
Mm-hmm. Kyle?
I'm going to say De-Evolution number one. I loved that first issue of that series. A dynamite book. And just the world they created and what it was and what I thought it was going to be going in. That one really stands out, and it came out in January. It's still in the back of my skull, and I really enjoyed De-Evolution number one.
Did you like issue 6?
No.
Or 5? What was the ending? Was it 5 or 6?
6 was the finale.
Yeah, I didn't either. So good up to that point, though.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's 4 Kids Walk Into a Bank number one from Black Mask. This was just really... had some laugh out loud stuff. It was really engaging, kind of a Goonies feel to it. I really dug it. It was really well conceived, and waiting on issue 2. Should be out any time now.
I'm hoping. Anytime this year.
Anytime. Who's your favorite writer from another publisher?
That's an easy one. Jeff Lemire. He who writes Bloodshot Reborn.
Ah.
So there's another reason to pick it up. Jeff Lemire is writing it.
Yeah, for me, I am kind of going Homer on Claws, and I'm going to say Grant Morrison. There's great Grant Morrison, there's good Grant Morrison, and then there's, I don't know what the F you're doing, Grant Morrison. And this is
definitely that Alan Moore Grant Morrison.
This is the great Grant Morrison.
Yeah. Kyle?
I'm kind of not real sure on that one. There's several things I've quite enjoyed. I enjoyed the Grant Morrison, of course, on Klaus.
or Claus.
Brian Wood was writing something that I has slipped from what he was writing that was in the other publisher's column this week.
Then you get it incomplete.
I get it incomplete on that one. I'm actually okay.
You had
with
45
that.
Answers for the category before and zero here.
Okay. He got well
you
ahead
couldn't
in
spread
image.
Him around a little
off.
Bit.
Okay, yeah, that's what it was. Okay, yes, it is Brian Wood and his combination of Eve Valkyrie and Rebel.
Oh, Eve Valkyrie was fantastic. I am not a video game guy, but James, you remember me talking to you about this. Those four issues were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah. So when I thought of that, I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong because what I was looking at other than like, well, that's Image. Wait, what was it? Aha, there is the other publisher stuff he did.
Was that Dark Horse that he did Eve Valkyrie for?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
I give it to Mark Waid for making me care about Archie. Good job, Mark. You're pretty good. Who's your favorite artist over at another publisher?
Well, assuming there's got to be somebody else in this podcast here who reads the Dark Horse Alien and Predator stuff. I'm going to go with the artist Tristan Jones. He's doing Alien Defiance with Brian Wood, writing that one. And it's a great book. I'm on a couple Alien message boards. And my favorite Aliens is my favorite movie, and I own all the comics and just about any expanded universe stuff that's ever been made. My favorite old Aliens book comic was Aliens Labyrinth by Killian Plunkett. And so when they announced this book on these message boards, we were talking about Aliens Labyrinth, and I said, well, you know, if this Defiance book is anything like Labyrinth, I will be happy. And the artist came on the message board and said, Killian Plunkett is my single biggest influence in the way that I draw comics. You'll be very happy. And he was not kidding. It is a great book. He's doing a great job. And he's drawing aliens the way that I want to see them drawn. So I have to give it to Tristan Jones.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, and I'm glad, Drew, that you had said Aftershock, because I'm going to go with Pat Oliffy, I think is how it's pronounced, the artist for Rough Riders. Mm-hmm. It's a great Western look with kind of a steampunky twist. Mm-hmm. And does a really good job of nailing the likenesses of a lot of those historical figures like Roosevelt, Houdini, Annie Oakley, but without making it photorealistic. So you can still see that there's some artistic talent there. But it's just a really pleasing to the eyes. So I'm going to go with we'll call him Pat. I'm going to go with Pat from Rough Riders.
Kyle?
Dan Mora on Klaus. I've been impressed with the art on every single issue of that. I think it's great. Love the line work, and especially some of the big spreads he does when Klaus is on the roof of the city. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of overlook everything. It's great. And we've gotten one issue of Strange Fruit from J.G. Jones, issue 3, and I consistently love the art on that book, but I'm going to need more work from that one.
Yes.
That is a good series.
Whoever I had in this category has been thrown away for Jason Burroughs on Providence, because I had forgotten how amazing that art is. So that's definitely my favorite artist. That's just amazing.
It's a good
stuff.
Pick. Good pick.
Yeah.
And I've met him. He's a very nice guy.
Is he?
Yeah, really cool. When I met him, I felt like kind of a dick because he was at the Avatar booth. And this is when the original series came out. And I was talking to him. He's like, I really like that Cross book. Ennis is doing a really great job. And he's like, well, how about the art? I was like, oh, that's pretty good too. He's like, oh, I'm the artist. I was like, oh, I love the art. You know, and then I bought a copy of every issue and had him sign all of them. So I've always been a big supporter of Jason Burroughs after that gaffe.
Quick recovery.
Now, what's the book from another publisher that you wish more people read?
This will be quick. Bloodshot Reborn. I'm done.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm going to say Brutal Nature.
Kyle?
Klaus.
I'm going to go with Scoriers from Devil's Due.
Saw that coming.
Yeah.
Oh.
Will somebody please read Scoriers besides me? Anyone? Anyone?
Table for
now,
one.
Now, is that the book with art by Ashley Witter?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think she's a Chicago native.
Yes.
If I recall correctly, because I know I saw her at C2E2 and a couple other shows recently.
Yeah, that's where I saw her and Ash Masco, the writer, both there.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. We've got a couple miscellaneous categories we wanted to talk about. We've got our hot publisher to watch from either a spec perspective on our end, or, well, spec perspective from a retailer's end as well, or maybe a publisher that's coming out of the woodwork now that people are buying that weren't buying before. So just whatever hot publisher to watch means to you.
Yeah, so for us at the shop, the hot publisher right now is DC. We cannot keep Rebirth on the shelves. Everything is flying. People are adding it to their pull lists. Books that we didn't see people subscribing to before, like Green Arrow, that people really fell off of, they're jumping back on now.
About Aquaman? Yeah, we didn't have any. We had no Aquaman subscribers, and now we've got, I think we've sold 25 copies of Aquaman in a week. It is amazing.
Yep. So I'm going to say for our shop, it's probably DC.
I was not expecting that. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense, though. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kyle, is it Aftershock for you?
Yeah, it's Aftershock for me. Of course, yep. DC's the hot property to watch because just everything that's going on. But Aftershock has impressed me with their lineup, what they're willing to give and get as many of the names as they can as far as creators and just put out really great books. So Aftershock, I love what they're doing.
I've never seen a small publisher with a top-to-bottom lineup of top-notch creators, good, solid books. They all seem to be coming out on time. They seem to have momentum. Just out of the gate like that. Really impressive. And maybe not since the Image spinoff of the 90s have we seen something like this.
I mean, what do you guys think spec-wise right now? I mean, they came out of the gate strong, but where do you see 451 Media?
They're going to have to prove that they can put a six-issue run and have it out in 6 months. They just break story momentum on everything. There's not a single thing that comes out consistently enough, and their stories suffer and their readers plummet like crazy.
And probably not put out 4 number ones in the same week. You need to stagger them a little bit because they're out right now. They've got nothing. And they out of sight, out of mind, right?
Yeah, I think this previews that has one solicit for them.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly. Yeah, it's kind of sad.
But I love
Black Mask did the same thing, so.
Yeah. What do you got now on the topic of Black Mask? I'm really curious what you guys think about the ridiculous amount of convention exclusive variants that they put out.
I did not know that. So,
yeah, I hadn't followed that as well.
Yeah, they've got a lot of exclusive convention variants. Like they'll do one show and they'll put out a cover that's got 50 copies. You know, and
yeah.
So you've got a lot of people. It's kind of a fetch quest to get all of these copies of the same issue. But unlike a normal variant, it's a lot of them are incredibly hard to get, and I'm wondering if the Black Mask bubble is going to start bursting when people kind of get sick of having to track down one out of 50 variants because it's from this show or San Diego or whatnot. So it's something to look into.
I do drool over these super cool variants, but I tend to not do more than buy the ones that are like under $5. I tend to not spend the big money on variants, but I like to look.
No, that's a smart way to do it.
Or your beauty secret variant.
I tend to. I didn't say never have. I did buy a convention variant from the beauty guys. That was kind of cool. let's see. Rising Star, whatever that means to you. Who's your rising star in comics?
Well, our rising star is an existing publisher, but kind of an unorthodox pick, mainly due to license properties. We have been selling a ton of Titan books lately. They put out Dark Souls, and we did not expect that to have the legs that it did, but it is. We're still selling copies of Dark Souls of the second, or it might even be a third printing now off the shelf. And Assassin's Creed has been flying off the shelves like crazy too. So I think we've got a hit on our hands with Titan, where with Doctor Who, it's been kind of an okay seller, and we haven't really carried a lot from them. But with their video game license titles, they've been doing a great job. selling a lot of books for us.
Mm-hmm. Look out for Dishonored. We just solicited that for August. That one will be huge as well in the video game tie-in.
Yeah, I agree.
And just from the covers alone on that. That one's solicited as a 4-issue mini, and I think that hurts it a little bit, but that one's going to be huge as well.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, is that your... You concur?
Yep. Yeah, I think Titan with Dark Souls, Assassin's Creed, and even the bevy of Doctor Who titles. The one thing that we've noticed in the shop, or at least I've noticed, and I think, James, you picked up on it too, is Doctor Who goes through these peaks and valleys with the actual TV series. When it's on BBC America with a new series, new season, all of a sudden there's a flood of people coming in looking for stuff. It doesn't have to necessarily be the newest Doctor, but it's a very peak and valley type thing. There's no heavy consistency with people coming in every month to get a Doctor Who book. So it's kind of a weird and fickle fandom to work with.
Yeah,
but they're nice people.
They are. The Doctor Who customer base is sort of like, and I don't mean this as an insult, but I just mean as far as buying habits go, it is almost exactly the same as the buying habits of children's books, because it doesn't matter what you have out. You could have 8th Doctor number 7, 9th Doctor number 4, and 11th Doctor number 15, and you'll have somebody come in and ask where Doctor Who stuff is, and you'll point over to the Doctor Who rack and direct them to where the product is, and they'll go over and they'll just grab it. It doesn't matter if the issues they're grabbing are in the middle of a story. They're buying Doctor Who to buy God, get some Doctor Who, and they generally don't ever care. I mean, we could probably order only every other issue of Doctor Who, and we would always sell out of it if we put it on the shelf. It is very strange. It's really the only, like I said, other than kids' books, it's the only book that has any kind of sales pattern like that.
That's crazy.
Kyle, it's kind of different.
Who's your rising star?
I have Max Landis written down because I just really want him to do more series, but he's going to be really, really difficult to get back into the comic book world because he just sold a Hollywood script for a record-selling $3 million for a spec script on it. He's currently showrunner on Dirk Gently coming out for a TV series. So it's going to be tough to get him back in the comic book world, but I think he hit it out of the park with American Alien, and I hope he gets DC just drags some money towards him and makes him write something else.
Cool. I gave it to another Max Bemis. He did a 2-issue crossed arc.
Yeah.
About a comic book owner, a comic book shop that went horribly, horribly wrong in the crossed outbreak. Thought of you guys when I read that one.
Oh, thank you. And
he also wrote The Worst X-Men Ever or something like worst. It's a 5-issue miniseries that was really good, came out of nowhere. I think he's got a lot of promise as a writer, and maybe has written a lot of stuff that I just don't know. But he's on the map for me, and I'm going to keep my eye out for anything else he writes because I really like his style.
Here's where I prove how unhip I am. He's a singer for a band, is that right?
Say Anything, yeah, the lead singer, Say Anything.
Okay. I know the John Cusack movie, and that's about it.
Let's see, your favorite miniseries.
So far, James. I would go... Oh, thank you. So far, I would go with the Aliens miniseries that Dark Horse is putting out. It's lived up to everything that I said, both it's Brian Wood writing it and just great art influenced from the same story that I really liked. If we give it to a series that came out last year that's still going, Providence. But Aliens, Defiance, or Providence would be one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think I'll toss in, even though it's still ongoing, Civil War II. That one's been a pretty steady seller. We can't obviously put Rebirth in because it's just a one-shot issue, but Civil War still has been steady as well. Not as flashy maybe as Rebirth has been, but sales are there. People are digging it.
Are you digging it?
I'm not reading it. I'm reading Silver Surfer, damn it.
Yeah. I'm sitting this one out, too. I'm done.
Yep.
Kyle?
Batman and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV with art by Freddie Williams. I love the tone of it. I love it took it seriously. It was a great mini. It wrapped up. It was the perfect amount of issues. And hopefully they do some more with that.
Yep, that was a good one.
And a shout out to Huck. You know, Mark Millar gets a lot of crap, but Huck, it of course is that what he's been doing lately, where it wraps up nicely and gives you a warm hug at the end, and Huck was great. Yeah.
If Claus was over, I probably would have given it to that one, but since it's not, I'm going to give it to Superman American Alien, because that was just great 7 issues. Really enjoyed that. Your favorite Free Comic Book Day title, or the most popular in your store?
You want to hit James, this, Eric?
You go, James, you go with the first one, I'll go with the second one.
Okay. The one that we ran out of almost right away sort of reflected what happened the day the actual book came out, which was the Steve Rogers Captain America. And as everybody knows, that sold out just about everywhere, and people were doing really, really nice quick flips on that book. But we went, I think we went through that long before we went through Civil War II and long before we went through Suicide Squad. So that should have been noticed right there, but that was just an unbelievable book that they put out. Everybody wanted it. Somehow it was the second tier Free Comic Book Day book, but for whatever reason, it was the biggest one that everyone was after, at least by us.
Yep, and then the other one that we had that did really well was Oddly Normal, which is through Image. It's written and drawn by Otis Frampton. Otis is he's a good friend of the store. He came down for our World's Smallest Comic Con last year. He's got 3 trades out, and it is the perfect book to give a middle school girl, absolutely bar none. We are very much into supporting him for him supporting us, but even more than that, we're excited because he oddly was optioned for TV series, and it was actually, I think, in a unique situation where the company that picked it up decided, rather than just pitching a concept to TV stations, they are in the final stages, I believe, of getting the animation and music all done for an actual mini short kind of pilot type snippet that they're going to take and show. So they are really all in on this, and it's a great book. It's one of those ones where we kind of show a few people and they instantly grab that first free comic book and they walked right over to the shelf and grabbed the first trade with it and came back within the next week or two and bought the second and third trade, which the third trade we've gotten 3 shipments of in now because we just haven't been able to keep it on the shelf. So that was the other big one for us. More of the kids selection is Oddly Normal.
Cool. Kyle?
And Otis is a heck of a nice guy too.
Oh my gosh, yes. If you see him at a con, go say hi. You will not be disappointed.
Is that how many issues of that is out?
So it was 10 issues for the first trade, and then what he did was, or no, it was 5 issues for the first trade, 5 issues for the second. He stopped doing the single issues. He worked with Image Comics, and they made a decision that the way that Oddly was selling, it sold better in trades, so it is switched over to an all-trade book now, and the trades are essentially a chapter.
Digestized.
Yeah. And they're essentially a chapter in Oddly's story. And if I remember right, he's either got 15 or 20 chapters in his head, and it is a finite series in his creative world, but he's got 15 or 20 of these that comprise Oddly's story. So there's three books out now, 3 trades out now, and the fourth one, I think, is coming early 2017. The fourth one would be out 2017. So, yeah, that's
so it's
that's
time
what
to
that
catch is. Up.
It is. You've got time to catch up.
And old guy could enjoy this, you think?
I think so. I enjoy it.
Cool.
I enjoy it, too. And I read Crossed, so what does that tell you?
It's definitely a little gentler than Crossed, but...
Yeah. We should pitch Otis a Oddly Normal Crossed crossover. I think that would go really well.
Now you've got my interest.
Maybe there as good go. As an Archie versus Predator?
Well, hopefully better than that one.
Please, anything could be.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle?
I didn't do much as far as the Free Comic Book Day. Some movement in value on the Civil War 2 one, and even a little bit on the DC Superhero Girls, up a little bit. There's some activity on those.
Nice.
What do you guys do when you're talking about speculating on the Free Comic Book Day books? What do you do to guarantee that you get a book that hasn't been stamped by the store?
Last time we went was last year, And we just made the rounds from store to store all day long, and I don't remember any of them stamping.
I don't think any of them were, huh?
Really? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Just you,
I'd say,
man.
Out here, no, I'd say out here about 90% of the stores do. Now, I deliberately left. I think we stamped about half of the books because we knew that we would have. See, I'm a collector at heart, too, so we knew we'd have people coming in wanting the unstamped ones, so we kept those aside, and we didn't, but we actually, I think we had maybe three people that came in deliberately asking for one that we hadn't stamped, so.
Huh, I've never noticed them. Kyle, do you remember any being
I've
stamped?
Never noticed stamps on almost any of them that we've gotten.
No kidding, okay.
Freaking Wisconsin.
Something to keep an eye out for.
You know, yeah, maybe it's just that stamp technology hasn't gotten down to Ohio yet. I don't know.
That's possible. We're out of ink.
Yeah, I'm most excited. I mean, I haven't read any of my free Comic Book Day books. But
I've got
your
pile here of some of them.
I'm so excited. I'm most excited for the We Can Never Go Home, Young Terrorists, Black Mask book. That's the one I'm most excited about. It's supposed to bridge the gap between the first arcs and the second arcs of those books, and should be kind of cool. So I'm kind of psyched about that.
Cool.
I'm curious about your highest selling wall book of the last 6 months, or maybe your best flip where you're able to pull in a nice key issue and put it on the wall and sell it for a tidy profit. If you're willing to talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
Sure,
oh,
sure. So we've got two. I'll do the modern one, and then James will do a Silver Age one. So last year at C2E2, the retailer exclusive book that was given out, that was the big one, was the Star Wars number one Luke Skywalker, Jonathan Tyler, Christopher, black and white variant action figure. Whew, that's
well, that, and it was given out at the Diamond Retailer Appreciation Breakfast Friday morning before C2E2 started. So you had to be a Diamond retailer, and you had to RSVP for this breakfast, and then you had to obviously attend the breakfast to get a copy of the book. And I think the estimate was that there were about 250 printed, but I'll jump back to you, Eric.
Yeah, so basically it was the black and white version of the Luke Skywalker book. Jonathan Tyler Christopher was in attendance at C2E2. We got two of them. We walked them over. He was nice enough to sign them. We took them straight over to CGC, had them go in, get graded, signature series. They both came back at 9.8 signature series books. And so we had about $25 into each one, and we were blessed to be able to sell them at about $1,000 a piece.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I can add in for John Tyler Christopher, I'm sure you guys remember the black and white Boba Fett variant of Star Wars that came out last year.
Oh, yeah. The one
now, that was a C2E2 where they sold out in like an hour. And I remember refreshing my browser when they were supposed to go on sale. And then the damn cart was broken. And by the time I finally got everything to work, they were all sold out. So I thought, okay, I'll go to get a couple copies from him for $20 a piece there. And by the time I got over to him with our Luke covers, there were already a bunch of pissed off people in line because he was selling them there for $60. And he was telling everybody that it's going for $80 online, so I'm cutting you a deal. And there were people that were getting very angry to the point where there were a lot of people standing around shouting at him and getting into pretty aggressive arguments. So we're like, we're going to cut out of here and come back later and get him to sign these and just not buy a Boba Fett cover. So... Oddly enough, we had some people bring them in. We have some in our store right now, and we did not pay $60 for them. So,
James, you want to go into the Silver Age, wall book that we had?
Yeah, the last one that we moved was an 8.0 Fantastic Four 48. And it was just a gorgeous book, and I actually got that through doing a little bit of trading up of some other books, and we ended up for that. I traded a New Mutants 98, traded a Daredevil 168, the first Elektra, and now this next one I've heard people say in two ways. I've heard people say NYX, and I've heard people say NYX 3, the first X23. However you decide to pronounce it, we also traded one of those in, and these were books that we had a combined total of about $250 in. to this guy for the FF48 that was already graded 8.0, and we turned around and got rid of it fairly quickly. I always like trading up for, I mean, even if we have three $400 books that we could trade for a $1,200 book, it's going to be easier for me to make that money back selling a $1,200 book than three $400 books. Now, we came out ahead with this anyways, but that was a cool way to get that by kind of, you know, trading up with some other books that we had already done some trading for, and we just kept going and going. Finally, we got that FF48 out of it and sold that pretty quickly off the wall.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
That's First Galactus, right?
48. First Silver Surfer and Galactus, yeah.
Oh, man, yeah, that's a cool book.
Now, I'm just going to throw out a shameless plug. That's not the only copy of FF48 that we've had in the shop. We also have FF52. We've got a lot of early Justice League. So, I mean, if people are looking for quality back issues and haven't been to our shop, we've got some great keys. And absolutely, we will ship them. You bet. We just shipped a couple of books to Ohio on Tuesday.
Kyle, what are you doing?
It was not Kyle.
Well, and just last month we had a JLA number one that came in, and it went out about just as quickly. So we've gotten a lot of really, really cool stuff in about the last 6 months.
Now, you said you went through quite a few Batman Adventures 12. That you've sold like half a dozen of those, haven't you?
Yeah, I'd say about that. The one that we've gone through half a dozen of this year has been New Mutants 98. And if there's – obviously, it's a book I think that's going to keep holding its value to a point. But between that and Batman Adventures 12 is – I look at the three biggest modern books. I'm not counting Turtles because I think it came out just before what I'd really consider to be modern. But New Mutants 98, Batman Adventures 12, and Walking Dead number one. And I think between the three of those, Walking Dead number one is always going to hold its value, probably go up a little bit, keep creeping up. Batman Adventures 12, I think, has got the most room for growth. And I think New Mutants 98 is, I believe, it's already overinflated. And with the amount of them that come in, I mean, besides the ones that we've actually bought, we've had a lot of them that people have brought in where they've just wanted too much for it. And we've said, no, sorry, we can't give you $300 for a $300 book. Whereas if somebody brought a Batman Adventures 12 and wanted $300 for it, I would do it in a heartbeat. So I think between all those books, if I had to hold anything, I would hold Walking Dead, buy Batman Adventures 12, and sell New Mutants 98. But that's just me.
I could have had a New Mutants 98 for $60, and I passed. It was a long time ago.
Go back and see if you can get it.
It was a long time ago.
I found one. Eric knows about this. I found one at a thrift store last year for $1, and it was hilarious because the guy – I always go into the shop and talk to the guy. Whenever he gets comics, he sets them aside for me. And I went in, and he had a giant stack on his counter. And I said, hey, you got some comics? He's like, yeah, this guy beat you to it. He got all the good stuff. And I looked, and he was buying a bunch of, like, random uncanny X-Men in the 300s. He's like, I got all the good stuff, man. I'm sorry. I was like, yeah, okay. I start going through it. Here's the New Mutants 98. I said, what are these kind of junk books you got left on the counter then? He's like, those are all $1. I was like, I'll give you $1 for this. Walked out. So that was a great feeling. And the other guy, and they both felt like, the guy got the best books, and he sold me a junk book for $1. Everybody won.
Everybody won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Except for that guy.
Yeah, I guess.
Hey, Kyle, you got anything for this?
I do not.
I don't really either. I can't compete with that. What is the highlight of the first 6 months of 2016?
Rebirth.
Easily Rebirth.
Rebirth. Yeah.
Yeah. That's mine, too.
I second that.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
I'm excited about how much this has energized me as a DC reader and other people, and it's really kind of exciting.
It was tough, honestly, for James and I to figure out how much we were going to order on it. And the reason I say that is not only was it, you know, it's the first major whatever you want to call it, knoitering, rejiggering of a universe that we've been shop owners for. But beyond that, when we went to the DC Retailer Roadshow, we were there at 7 o'clock at night, And I think by 2 a.m. the next morning, our FOC was due, our final order. So we had to make our decisions really ahead of going into that retailer summit. And if we were going to make a change, it had to be quick on the way home in some fashion. So we sat down and we did. We bought more of Rebirth than we have bought for any other book. And as we were kind of sitting down and listening to Dan DiDio and Jim Lee talk through it and get to the points of, we see that we've strayed kind of the main line. We know that readers are saying that they don't feel connected to the DC universe. We realize that the TV shows and the movies are dependent on the comics for the history, and we need to retain that and recover it. We kind of, I think, both were breathing a sigh of relief, like, okay, this book is not returnable. This is going to be a complete recentering. We're okay with it. And it paid off in spades. I think that our shop definitely ordered more than anyone in our immediate area. One of the shops that's within an hour away from us ordered 3 total copies of Rebirth. And we easily tripled that number, maybe 30 times at least. So for us, it was one of those things where it was a little kind of holy crap. But as soon as we started hearing that, and as soon as it came out, and like James said, we had people calling from all around asking if we had it. We had a woman come in from downtown Milwaukee, bought 2 issues to mail to Sydney, Australia, because the comic store in Sydney, Australia ran out, and her son is a service member. Yeah, they only have one comic store, apparently, or at least one that's known by people. So she came in, bought 2 copies of it, and literally that afternoon, it was on its way to Sydney, Australia. So that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Well, and another thing with Rebirth, which to me was the most illuminating about how big this was really going to be, was we did sell through the one shot very quickly, but it wasn't a case of people coming in and speculating by buying 5 or 10 copies.
Right.
I don't think we had anyone. We had a few people that bought both covers, but by and large, it was all people coming in and buying a copy to read. People that we've never seen before, that a lot of people that have never read a comic before. It was readers coming in to buy this. It wasn't just speculators, and that just opened my eyes about how big Rebirth could really be.
Were you surprised that nationally it just crested 250,000 copies? Did you think it would be bigger? I did.
No. I didn't. And the reason that I didn't think it was going to be bigger is because of the tight turnaround that you had to have as a retailer to order it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think hurt it was, number one, the delay of the announcement, and then the delay of getting the DC previews from the regular previews. That's all those delays stacked against it. So retailers had to really hedge their bets and say, either what am I comfortable with knowing that I can absolutely get sold, or what am I willing to accept to take a bath on? And most retailers are should be, if they're intelligent, mm-hmm. are not willing to take a big bath. So they're only going to sell what they can. We reached, and we got, some cases we got lucky. We like to think that we put a lot of thought into it, because we did, and nailed what we needed to do.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, we kind of half thought that the whole Rebirth line would be kind of DOA, that it wouldn't pick up, that it would seem like they had tried too many times. We've had a lot of people that have come in and said, didn't they just do this with the new 52? And we said...
Or even worse, Convergence.
Yeah.
Let's not even talk about Convergence. Well, and yeah, that's another thing where I think you want to look at the big difference between the companies. Convergence and Secret Wars sort of did the same thing to a point where they temporarily put all the core books on hold to do a bunch of different miniseries. And whereas Marvel did, you know, after Secret Wars, Marvel relaunched a bunch of new number ones. And what we saw was most of their numbers dropped off. I mean, we sell less copies of Amazing Spider-Man now than we did before Secret Wars. And Convergence was such... Secret Wars sold really well. So that's why it was a shock to us. Convergence was such a terrible stinker of an event, and it sold like crap. And Rebirth comes out, and we're selling. We can't keep half the books on the shelf. So I was surprised just because of that. I was expecting it to be like the Marvel renumbering, only worse, where we were just going to see more and more people lose interest, but it was the exact opposite.
Yeah, and I want to call out, with both Convergence and Secret Wars, the respective publishers screwed the pooch on both of them. Because, like James said, Convergence was just a pooper. I mean, it was bad. It wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. It was rushed. It was not high quality, and it didn't help them. But almost as bad or even worse, I think part of the reason why we saw a drop-off of Marvel titles is the number one started coming out before Secret Wars was even done.
Mm-hmm.
So you were getting stories that were dependent on the end of Secret Wars ahead of it. And people, I think, kind of in their mind said, well, I don't even know what the end of Secret Wars is. I'm not going to jump onto a new title without knowing what the fallout's going to be. So they both kind of screwed the pooch on themselves.
Yeah.
Well, and I knew right away when they put, was it Sad Ribic? Ribic,
yep.
I think is his Ribic. Name. Yeah, when they put him on it, I remember the announcement they made. The first thing I said was, it's never going to come out on time. He's a really cool guy. I've met him. Very, very, very heavy, thick accent. But the guy cannot keep a schedule going. His art is hyper detailed. It's beautiful art, but for an event book, if they should have had the first six issues in the bag before they decided to drop the series, because it, like Eric said, it really did lose almost all of its momentum. We've got 10 copies of Secret War 9 sitting on the shelf, and maybe one copy of an issue before 7. There were a lot of people who just stopped buying it because of the delays, and then when you'd pick up Iron Man number one, and there's Doctor Doom in the first issue, obviously that kind of gives something away. So it was really a non-starter for us the way that they bungled it.
Yeah,
that was terrible. What is your prediction for the rest of 2016?
So I think our prediction is that Rebirth is going to cool off a little bit, but it's going to remain a very popular line-wide event, at least through this first year. And I think that speaks to the quality of creators and the way that they're starting out, kind of getting back to the history, and then also the new approach that they're kind of taking to creating the books. I, outside of comics, work in the software development world, not like John as an actual developer, but as a project manager. And one of the ways that we work is very specific on looking at quarterly chunks of work we're going to do and then breaking it down. And that's essentially what Jeff Johns is going to be doing with the different creative teams within the respective title sub areas. So you've got your Superman titles, you've got your Gotham titles, Green Lanterns. He's going to be sitting down with the different creators and just making sure that there is not only continuity within the book itself, but continuity across the entire line, so that we don't see this fracturing of books. And I think that, for me, that is a sign of learning and growth and how we don't want the DC Universe to fracture apart anymore. So I think Rebirth will cool off, but I think that it's going to remain a really strong, hopefully will remain very strong for at least the next year or two.
Yeah, and one more thing to interject with why I think Rebirth is going to do really well. And we didn't even talk about this, I don't think, in our Rebirth coverage podcast that we did, was that DiDio and Lee, when they were up there talking at the Rebirth Roadshow, sort of admitted that they've been ignoring a lot of the feedback from retailers that they don't want, there's no reason to put out another Black Canary series or another Dr. Fate series when you do your big relaunch, because it's going to get 12 issues in and it's going to crap out and no one's going to buy it. You know, The last Omega Men that Tom King was doing was a great book, but it got canceled at issue 6, and it got brought back again for a few issues, and then it got canceled again. Great books, but they don't sell. And I don't want to say that it's a good thing to stifle creativity and not to give kind of those third tier titles a chance. But the problem is, they always, always, always drop off. Inevitably, they drop off. And what they said that they're going to do with Rebirth is, instead of putting out another Dr. Fate series, it's going to be dead by issue 8. Let's get Dr. Fate worked into another series that's got all these other characters in it, whether it's going to be called Earth 2 or Justice Society or whatever. Let's get these characters that would be in these books that aren't going to be able to carry themselves and put them together and make sure that we have a very, very, very strong foundation before we put a book out. Is there going to be a market to sustain the book for at least 24 issues, which is now a full year? And I think that's going to make things a lot easier on the retailer, and it's going to give the ongoing series more of a chance to shine because they're not going to be fighting with editorial against getting canceled by the sixth issue. So that's the other thing I think that people should consider is that DC is not going to be putting out these third tier titles. They're going to be focusing on the heavy hitters.
Which is, I mean, I think it makes sense. And, you know, if you want to tell an Omega Man story, just tell it in one of your ongoings.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Just shoehorn exactly. it in there. Shoehorn it in there somehow.
Well, and you know that with this double shipping for a lot of these titles, you know that there's going to potentially be burnout or there's going to be, you know, artists that just aren't able to keep up, you know, and that's going to happen. So if you know that's already going to happen, you can take advantage of that and give someone a spell for a month or two, let them recharge and rejuvenate and keep it going by putting one of these other stories in.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, what's your prediction for the rest of 2016?
I'm going to guess for the rest of 2016, there will be at least 3 months that DC will beat Marvel in total sales.
You got to be kidding me. That is my exact prediction.
That's awesome. And we didn't talk about that.
June, July, August, I'm thinking, right?
July, August, and then maybe September.
I think they got this month.
Did you see what the top reorder was, though? It was Civil War 2, Issue 3. DC had 75% of the reorder chart, but Marvel still took number one.
But the rumor is 350,000 plus for Batman, number
one. Oh, I believe it.
So, pile all that on, and I'm thinking DC probably takes June, July. From what I ordered for August, it looks dominant there. And then
Kyle's order.
It's just based on myself alone, but just adding on to those each and every month.
Thing to keep in mind is DC is not going to divulge how many copies of a book get returned, too, though.
Yeah.
Because all those
but
books
neither
are
does
100%
Marvel ever, and Marvel has a lot of weird
returnable
stuff, does it?
But that's... Diamond will adjust those on their charts.
So I had a good little email back and forth with our good friend John Mayo talking about that and how he calculates it. And what he is told is, from Diamond's standpoint, the safe assumption, without going too far over or too far under, is most returnable titles get 20% back. I think for Rebirth so far, at least for the Rebirth number one and the first, or the individual title like Green Lantern Rebirth number one and then Green Lantern number one, for those titles, I think that by and large, there's not going to be as much return activity. Maybe by the third issue there will be, or the third month of issues, I should say, but I don't think so in the upfront. And Kyle, to also add a little extra oomph behind your statement of the 3 months, we just submitted our order to Diamond for 2 months out from now. Mm-hmm. And what would you say, James? It's maybe almost double what we normally do, a little bit under double what we normally do, and a lot of that is DC.
The full order is probably double what we would normally submit, but our DC alone is, I mean, it's just an incredible amount of books compared to what we used to order. We've probably got, I would say it's safe to assume that we are ordering 20 times the DC books that we used to order.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm super heavy on DC for the August, the one we just submitted. And even as I said it, I just looked at myself and said, man, I should have tripled my Harley order.
Jeez Louise. Okay, the book that's most dropped from pull lists, and then on the flip side, the book that's most added to pull lists in the last 6 months, and it's probably in the last 6 weeks that you can probably find your answer, I'm guessing.
Obviously that's going to be anything from Rebirth. I don't think we could really narrow it.
Most surprisingly from the Rebirth, it's Green Arrow to me that people are adding to their pull list.
Yeah, well, you know, both Flash and Green Arrow are being added, and I do think that the TV shows have a lot to do with that. We've got, you know, one customer in particular who has the big Green Arrow tattoo. Eric, you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And he's started coming in because of the TV shows. And now he is, I think he's another guy that subscribed to every Rebirth book. He's in every Wednesday, like right when we open. Really, really nice guy, young guy. And he is a diehard DC fan that was won over by the TV shows. Hadn't read comics before that. and he buys anything that we can find Green Arrow. I bought a big collection from somebody, and they had a Mike Grell Green Arrow shirt from the 80s that was still in the original Graffiti Designs bag that it shipped in. It had never been worn. So I put it in his pull list, and he wore it around for like a week. He was super psyched to get that. So I think that with those titles, they've had such increased awareness because of the TV shows that that might propel them to be – you may actually have Green Arrow outselling Green Lantern for a while. And maybe the same thing with Flash outselling Superman. I know we've sold more Flash than we have Superman with Rebirth now, and it'd be kind of neat to see the tiers shift of who the top characters are at DC, and maybe it is completely related to the other media.
That is weird because, yeah, DC's putting a lot of eggs in the Superman basket, and if it turns out to be the two television properties that are doing the best, mm-hmm. and that's really amazing. That would be cool because John Mayo says that doesn't happen. So
here's another thing, I guess, to his point though. We don't get a lot of people to come and add Marvel books to the list because Civil War came out, or Iron Man came out, or
right.
Apocalypse is out,
or Daredevil.
But DC's DC's TV shows are getting people in and reading their books. So, they're not making the hundreds of millions or billions that the Marvel movies are making, but as a driver to get people into the comic series, the DC shows are far outshining the Marvel mm-hmm. movies for us.
And I think part of the reason why we see Green Arrow and the Flash specifically, obviously the Flash played a huge part of Rebirth.
Right.
So that's big. But then also, one comment that we've gotten from, I think, two or three more experienced readers who have lived through the Mike Grell era of Green Arrow were commenting, man, this feels like the Green Arrow that I know. He looks like the Green Arrow that mm-hmm. I know. He's talking like the Green Arrow I know. And right then and there, these are guys that loved Green Arrow in the past, but completely fell off of it in the New 52. They didn't like the way the character was going. They literally, one of them, who is one of our best customers, just a wonderful man, he picked up the book, got home that afternoon, read it, and it, within 10 minutes of reading the book, shot us a message on Facebook, you need to add Green Arrow to my pull list. I mean, Green Arrow is now exciting people who kind of left it and are coming back. So I think that's another key piece. James, you want to drop the ball on the most dropped from pull lists?
Even though I mentioned before, it was I talked about Walking Dead, and I do think that the Image subscription program is hurting stores. The other book that I noticed, despite saying it was a juggernaut before, is the core Star Wars title. We get a lot of people that are losing steam on that book. Mm. And there have been a lot of people that have dropped that, and they said, take it off my list. They'll still probably pick it up. Just don't put it in my box, which usually means there's about a 50% chance that they'll actually buy it off of the shelf. And that's carried over to a lot of the Star Wars miniseries that we used to have. A lot of people that would just subscribe to Star Wars all. They wanted Vader, they wanted Leia when it came out, they wanted the Star Wars core title. And then they started pumping out a lot of books that were kind of fun, but that every miniseries that came out, we saw a little bit less sell-through. Lando, we ordered, I think, like 75 copies of, and we've still got a bunch of those on the shelf. Chewbacca, we toned it down, but we sold a good amount of them. We still have a lot on the shelf, to the point where Poe Dameron, we're down to maybe, 20 copies of Poe Dameron a month that we're getting. And we've definitely seen a drop-off. Now, they're still outselling almost all of the Marvel books, but they are dropping off.
Vader down.
Did you go heavy on Han Solo?
Yeah, we did. And I think I ordered too many, I'll be honest. I think I did. We had... honestly, we sold maybe 12 or 15 since it came out, and I'm going to have a big old pile sitting there for quite a while. Hopefully the Rogue One comes out and we get a lot of people coming in to rebuy them. We have a pretty big, hearty Star Wars section where we have all the books out, and They do have legs. I mean, we still get a lot of people coming in and buying Shattered Empire. And now that they have that, did you guys hear about the spec news on Shattered Empire 4?
No.
Uh-oh. Well, big spoiler alert. If you want to, I'm not going to spoil what the spoilers are, but Shattered Empire 4 is now being viewed as a good spec book because of the leaked spoilers for Episode 8. So yeah, if you want to find out what that is, check it out. You could. It's probably to the point where you can walk into just about any store and get that book at cover. But yeah, that's probably aiming to be a pretty decent spec book. Also, if anybody listening knows this, or if you guys know this, they just revealed the character that Forrest Whitaker is playing in Rogue One, and it's actually an existing character. So we need to figure out what his first comic appearance was and then stockpile the hell out of that.
And then there's talk of Captain Phasma's first appearance, if you're not counting the fact that she was in a hologram in the one that just came out, also coming up.
Yeah, I have a hard time with those movie adaptations being... I mean, it'll be the first appearance of, like, Rey and Finn, but I think it's not going to be near the same as... what Shattered Empire 4 is going to end up being, potentially, if the spoilers are, you know, correct, or whatever this first appearance of Forrest Whitaker's character is, which everybody's got to get on that really quick, because I'm dying to know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, that's Star Wars is probably our line-wide most dropped book, except for Vader.
Yeah,
yep, that's Vader holds firm.
I wouldn't have guessed that in 20 tries. So that's pretty interesting. Okay, we're at close to 2.5 hours.
Oh my god,
we just started.
Did we miss anything? Is there something you want to do to close here, or you want to? Well, we need to plug anything.
Yeah, we do have one thing coming up in the shop that we'd love to plug, if that's all right.
Yeah, help yourself.
All right, so on July 2nd, if you're in the Milwaukee area, or if you need an excuse to come to the Milwaukee area, we will be having Phil Hester in our shop starting at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
He's going to be there for probably about 4 hours is what it sounds like right now. He'll be signing books, including the new Deathstroke
Annual 2, which he is writing, and that comes out this coming Wednesday. Which is why we tied it into this 4th of July weekend, so he can kind of, you know, do that with the launch of the Deathstroke Annual. And it's interesting to note, by the way, there are no Rebirth titles coming out this next Wednesday.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at it. Ugh.
Is that fifth week?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But everyone should pick up Deathstroke Annual 2, because Phil Hester is a heck of a nice guy. Mm-hmm. And then buy it from us, and he'll sign it for you.
Yeah, and added to that, he will be... in the shop, like I said, for about 4 hours. There's a limited number of slots for sketches that he will try and do. Are they all full now?
Oh. Yep.
Try and bribe James to bump his own off your list if you want.
Not doing it.
But either way, so yeah, Phil Hester is going to be stopping by July 2nd. So if you want to come up and meet him, that would be a great time. And just stay tuned to our Facebook page, because we've got some pretty killer stuff in the works for the end of summer, early fall, as far as creators and events happening out of the shop.
Yep.
Awesome. This is the inaugural first half Cowie Award celebration. We really need to work on our name and our branding for this. But we really appreciate
that. Was that a cow joke with the branding?
No, but it should have been.
That was utterly terrible.
Oh my god, it's getting worse as it goes along.
We want to thank the guys from Cowabunga for joining us and taking the time to answer all these category questions. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you're still listening after nearly 2.5 hours. And for Kyle, we want to thank you for listening to Comics for Fun and Profit. And you'll also be hearing this on the Cowabunga Comics podcast as well, the Cowcast. So enjoy, and we appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us on, guys.
All right.
Yes, really appreciate it too.
Thank you. Kyle, you want to sign us off?
See ya.